Call the Conference Committee on House File 2362 to order. I believe, members, we left off on page 46. Section 27 is what I see. Ms. Dalton, does that sound about right?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. Do we have 10 minutes?
Senate recessed for 10 minutes the other day and came back 4 hours later.
I hope that won't take this long. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Section 27 of the House bill, which is at the bottom of page 46, is the sales tax exemption for construction of the bioscience research facility. This is the Austin, the Hormel Institute in Austin. Section 28 is the sales tax exemption for material supplies and equipment in the initial construction of a biobusiness center in the city of Rochester. And the Senate has...
The Senate has a similar position, Mr. Chair, except the Senate only exempts materials and supplies and not equipment, and it does not include the parking ramp or related infrastructure, and the tax has to be paid and refunded.
Sections 29 through 32 actually are just technical provisions to allow for the refunds of any of the construction exemptions that need a refund. So they're merely technical. Section 33 modifies the statutory provisions related to local sales tax, and basically it says that a political subdivision will not be allowed to impose a general sales tax if it hasn't been permitted by a special law enacted prior to January 1, 2008, and it prohibits a political subdivision from seeking authority after January 1, 2008, or from spending any of its own revenue to advertise, promote, or hold an election for a referendum to impose a local sales tax.
Madam Chair, this would be very unpopular with members of the Senate.
Senator Chair Bach, you know it would be the right thing to do, though. We're going to convince you.
Didn't it all say it wasn't, but I can see the language, notwithstanding language, coming in future sales tax bills. It's a good thought, though.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
Just so you know a little bit our thought here, we've come to believe in the House over the last number of years that for some reason local units of governments feel that because the law says you know, there's this process, that we've got city councils now who believe that because they went to the voters and they took a vote and it passed, that means they get it. And we all know that that is not the case, and people can pass these locally all they want, but only the legislature can decide to grant them. People are de facto believing that if they take a vote first, it's a done deal. And we in the House, not every one of these conferees, but the majority of the conferees, don't like them. We think they exacerbate disparities between rich and poor communities, and those with good tax bases do better, and those with milder or weaker tax bases do worse. And we'd like to get rid of them completely, but we sure don't want to leave language that implies here's the path to getting them. And unfortunately, I think the current law, for whatever reason, we've got a lot of city council reading it that way. That we'll just go out, we'll get the vote, we'll get it to pass, and we'll come here and we'll get it. And so it's making it very hard for legislators to say no when they actually do pass them. So we want to stop them, and we've as Representative Marquardt said, we'd like to slam the door shut and bolt it so they can never, we could never pass another one again.
Representative Marquardt, do you have any cities in your district that have one?
I don't know for sure. I'm thinking right now. I was going to say on the shutting the door and bolt it, remember Maxwell Smart and Get Smart? Remember
that?
The
guy that talked into his shoe?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And remember at the end of the show, all those doors would close behind him, and then he tried and he got his nose caught in the one at the end. That's a local option sales tax. It has nose shut at the very last time. But there is a policy thing, and Madam Chair had mentioned the one on the disparity, but the other thing we're really concerned about is initially when LGA was and stated during the Minnesota Miracle in 1971. At that time, it was prohibited to have local option sales tax, saying you've got the local government aid. And as Ms. Dalton has provided for us, is that states that have unlimited local option sales taxes tend to have the least amount of per capita local government aid, and those that tend to restrict local option sales tax tend to have a higher number of amount of LGA. And many of the cities actually, in testimony as they come before us, and we're asking questions, and Representative Rukavina would always ask us, I remember last year, you know, what was your cut in local government aid? And that's kind of a reason why they're coming towards us. And our fear is that the more you allow these, the more is the notion for people to go in and try to erode local government aid. They're going to say, you've got this local option sales tax. So one part that we're looking at is that if we're going to try to keep the integrity of local government aid, we've got to make a split here and do away with these. Otherwise, there's going to be a real line that's going to be blurred there, and all of a sudden, and you know, there's been attempts, in fact, in some of the prior house tax bills, I think it was the 05 one initially, that said Duluth and Minneapolis, St. Paul, since you could have a tax, you're going to lose your LGA in percent. I mean, so there are efforts out there already to do just what we're saying. So that's a real concern is, and then also is, where do you draw the line? So, but
I think the 2003 house tax bill had a LGA offset if you had a local option sales tax.
I think. That was the 05 house.
Ms. Dalton?
Some cranking.
I think it was the 2000. I believe Senator Bach is correct. I do believe it was the 2003.
I think it was both, actually. Yeah. I think it was both.
Oh, both.
Representative
Devin? I remember the 05 proposal was the offset for the cities of the first class. And then you had to go to a referendum on the sales tax, but the offset occurred whether the referendum passed or not. You might figure out why I remember that, particularly that last provision. It stuck with me.
Let me tell you why the chair remembers it was 2003.
Okay.
Because the House came to conference with a local government aid offset for local option sales tax, fiscal disparities, and taconite aid.
Oh.
And the only one that survived the 2003 session was the taconite aid offset, and the others fell out.
Mr. Chair?
Madam Chair?
I actually think fiscal disparities is counted as an offset and always has been. And I think that Representative Marquardt's point, and I think we all know this, I mean, is really well taken when you think about it. You know, it gets harder for the legislature to look at any city and not count its revenue streams. So if it has a revenue stream, whether it's fiscal disparities or a local option sales tax or whatever, those who are not using those mechanisms can say, well, why don't they have to count that? Why don't they have to count their local option sales tax? And for people who want to fund LGA at lower levels, it helps make the argument. And so we have thought that just what Representative Marquardt said, and maybe Ms. Dalton can provide for everyone, the Department of Revenue, I think, did the study on what a local option sales tax is really doing out there and looked at just a few years ago. Good stuff, short study, and really did show that exactly what Representative Marquardt said, is that states who do these generally don't equalize. And states who equalize, which Minnesota has been a leader on and something I think we're proud of, whether it's in local aids or school equalization, in all the ways we try to means test what we're doing in Minnesota, states who do a lot of equalization generally don't do local option sales tax. And once we start letting these happen, it gets easier and easier for those who would undo LGA to argue that we don't need it anymore. So we feel the policy is strong. And if Mr. Manson could provide next week, not tomorrow, next week, maybe Ms. Dalton study. Ms. Dalton, if you can provide, I think it would be really helpful. It's just a few pages and very thorough, and I think even for those at the table who have a local option sales tax, if you really look at that study, you will really think long and hard about letting anyone else have one. And I have asked all the House members bipartisanly who introduced these bills, I say, I will hear your bill, or Representative Marquardt will, but you have to go read that study first. And almost all of them admit offline bad policy. They can see it. if they really understand. So, Ms. Dalton, it would be great if you could bring that on Monday. Good piece of information.
Ms. Dalton, do you remember what the two provisions in the 03 bill were in addition to taconite aid offset? Local options.
Local option. I don't remember what the third one is. Fiscal disparities has always, there's always been an adjustment for fiscal disparities in how we measure tax capacity used in the LGA formula.
County.
So it wasn't that.
For county? What about city? Both?
Mm-hmm.
Do we do that on the range fiscal disparities too?
So
does Rukavina know that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he does. He does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I sat here and listened to this, I think we could make some headway on this provision, and it would work quite well with the Senate's dollar amount on LGA.
Now you're thinking.
Now, Mr. Manson, we're getting close. I actually share the concerns about communities, and let me give you the example in my district, Ely. Most people in the room are familiar with Ely. Ely's got a pretty good retail base, strong summer economy, and they have for years wanted a local option sales tax. And a neighboring community of Babbitt, 15 miles away, is a bedroom community to the mine. And has very, very little retail. And as we head down the road of allowing some communities to have a local option and others not, and then start, it really does create a lot of winners and losers. And which makes me kind of think maybe if we're going to do local options, they ought to have to be countywide.
Be the biggest winners in the state.
Or some regional purpose within the county. So that you don't create those kind of disparities within neighboring cities in the same county.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
In the House, we've had those proposals actually the last two or three years. Maybe Mr. Michael or Ms. Dalton or Representative Simpson recalls, but I think Representative Vandeveer did something like that, Representative Dorman. I think we've had bipartisan attempts to sort of say, look, if you're the Ely, you know, and you get the benefit, and we live in the town next door, but we come in and shop and buy our toothpaste there, you, Ely, you get to spend all the money. Our town doesn't get it, but that is where I'm buying my stuff. So there's been efforts to kind of rope in everyone around by this many towns, whole county, region. There's different methods that have been proposed. It always seems though at some place as you go out in concentric rings, it stops somewhere. So you make it somewhat better, but, you know, I've never seen how you can get all the way there. And I've thought one of the complicating factors in all this is, people think of it as a greater Minnesota phenomenon, except for Minneapolis and St. Paul. But the truth is, for 43 suburbs in Hennepin County, we have a local option sales tax, and we didn't want it. We didn't get to vote on it, and we're paying it every day. And so we are now to the point that I've said in the House, if we're going to let people have them, everyone should get them, you know, because a whole bunch of suburbs are paying for them, and we didn't want them. And our city councils didn't come and ask for them, and we didn't get to vote on them. So it gets harder and harder to justify how this city should get it, not this city. And while I prefer none, if we can't get to none, then maybe it should be all. And then I think when you say, let's let everyone do it, people get immediately the inherent unfairness. They, you know, in my community, Senator Larson, we could abolish the property tax. Wouldn't even need it. We'd generate so much revenue. You know, is that fair? Now, other people would say Minneapolis and St. Paul shouldn't have it. Look how much they can generate. You know, I mean, when you are picking winners and losers, that's where all the hard feelings come in. And we've watched it on the House side bipartisanly for years as people just get madder and madder. And I guess we're to the point where we'd just argue as hard as it would be, it would just be the better thing to just say we're not doing them anymore and step up and fund LGA and County A the way we're supposed to and do equalization straight up based on need.
Representative Lanchesky, where's Representative Dietrich tonight?
No. But you know, as a non-voting member, she doesn't have to be here every minute.
I thought she was here to observe and learn. Senator Marty?
Mr. Chair, I Senator Representative Gonteski mentioned that Bloomington is could do away with the property tax, and I know that, I've seen the rankings, and Roseville is actually number one, almost 2-1 over Bloomington even, in per capita retail.
Yep.
And yeah, we could do away with the same thing too. And it, matter of fact, we had a former mayor who thought that was a great idea, and we kind of told him we didn't think it was a fairness. It wasn't fair. And I think your point about how you try and rope in a couple more cities and bigger circles and circles, ideal one is maybe make it statewide. Whatever we want to do with sales taxes, we ought to do statewide. So I think we're going to get there sooner or later. I see you've got two new sales taxes in your bill. But four? New ones?
Two new ones, two expansions.
But I think you're right about the direction that if we're going to have a tax like that, it ought to be statewide, not pick and choose.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just on that point, and we'll get to it, but at the risk of taking a minute here to explain why those are there, we've got a couple who already took a vote. And that's Bemidji and North Mankato. And they've already voted, and they just believe we thought that was the deal. We took the vote. We passed it. Don't we get it? And so we decided if you already voted, you're in. And the door slammed shut. The other exception we made is Crookston for flooding, because we have done those for flooding or disasters that have hit certain parts of the state, and we have a precedent for that. So that was it. The Duluth is just an extension. They're picking up a new use. But we were trying to, rather than pick it off, we even had debate in Chairman Marquardt's committee on why this city, who passed it by a large margin, and why this city that barely passed it, and we just said, look, you know, we all have different margins in our elections, and we don't say, you know, you get to sit here if you won big. I mean, you get to sit here whether you, if you win by one vote. So we didn't want to discriminate between the city that passed it by a big margin and the city that barely passed it. We just said they passed it, we'll put them in, done. So that's why they're there. We couldn't figure out a different way to cut through all of them out there. And we were trying to draw a line, really. And you could argue it's a superficial line, and we're open to changing it, but that's how we came up with it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Watt, or Senator Ma, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if this is, it's a pattern that I've noticed in the last 4 or 5 years since I've been here, that it's sort of the same argument as the school district levies, I think, in that I think as the needs have grown at the school districts and at the municipalities, and as resources have gotten tight, I think that local governments have had to get creative to find resources to deliver the services that they need for their citizens. And so I don't have the historical perspective on sort of the peaks and valleys of these legislations that ask for the local option sales tax. And I don't have a good feel for that, but I certainly have been paying attention to the levies, the school district levies, and, you know, which school districts passed and which ones failed, and based on their needs, and they all need them. And so, you know, part of the bigger picture here is that we've had some pretty hard times in the last 5 years. And all levels of government, from school districts to county to cities, have had to kind of scrape and get by. And I'm glad that we're having this discussion, because at the end of the day, it is sort of a needs discussion. And again, I'll come back to my theme, is that as we're looking at this, I think that the aim here is to try to strike a balance between the different options that are out there. And perhaps it isn't so much coming to an absolute conclusion on what's permissible and what's impermissible, but how do we create a plate full of different options, of different solutions that will give maximum flexibility to local government to be able to do the things that we need them to do and to deliver the services that we need them to deliver. And if a certain municipality says, you know what, to address our needs, maybe we want to go towards the local option sales. That's, you know, certainly up for discussion. I appreciate principles that guide good public policy decisions, and we need that. You know, we need to put the fences in place. But I also think that it's also important to recognize that perhaps, and again, I'll say for the local option sales, I have not been paying as close attention, but I'll just use the school districts as the example, is that when the needs have been so hard, I feel like they've had to do whatever they can to try to deliver those services. And so, you know, now, I mean, I don't know. I'm optimistic that perhaps we're moving to a phase where, you know, we could start to have those conversations about how we can invest, how we can give a little bit more relief to local governments so that they don't have to feel like they have to stretch themselves thin, you know. Fees and surcharges and local option sales tax and, the whole menu of things that local government have had to do in order to continue to function in the last several years has been downright depressing to watch. And in a way, the reason why we've ended up here is because I think a lot of them feel like they don't have any other options, and they've had to do this. So, you know, as we move forward, I hope that we'll kind of take a step back and look at the big picture. And yes, we want to put some nice guidelines in place to help us in our future decision making, but also keep the eye on the prize that we also don't want to close our avenues to give some flexibility to how local governments can address their needs.
Senator Bach.
Representative Simpson.
Well, the one thing that I think that we've seen in these local option sales tax in the past and are continuing to see is that a lot of these aren't based off as much of a need basis as they are off of the desire to do extras, to do parks, to do rec trails, to do amusement center, rec centers, and that type of stuff. And I think that's a lot of things we've seen in the past. We have also seen the flood mitigation and some of those types of things where they've come forward with them. But I do have to agree with what you said, Senator Bach, with picking winners and losers as we see regional centers created in our rural areas. We're importing all the money into those regional centers. And it's certainly showing the effects of the surrounding small communities around them. So if you give them the option to do a local option sales tax, you're just, again, taking one more step against the small communities.
What if we excluded them and only allowed them in small communities?
Well, I think Senator Bach, Representative Rukavina had a bill on the floor that passed a year or two ago where towns of a population of 200 or something could apply for a local option sales tax, and maybe that approach might be an approach to do, but I think when you look at the big picture, I think maybe the going back to the LGA and using that basis of funding has more merit, or doing a statewide sales tax has more merit than these individuals, because you're picking winners and losers.
Mr. Chair, to your idea of maybe just letting the little ones do it, I mean, that would be, I suppose, better than the current system. And you could, I guess you could say, if your average net tax capacity is under, you know, for a 1% tax rate, if you can only levy 400 a head or less, or 500, pick a number, and maybe you qualify. And that would be mostly rural Minnesota. That's at least needs tested. I mean, if you do a 1% tax rate, in my community you can levy $1,500 a head. In probably most of your communities you can levy maybe $300. So, you know, maybe there is a way to measure. It would certainly take the whole metro out. And it would take all the greater regional centers out. And that's probably the fair way. I guess the problem with that would be unless there are tourist areas, which in a few cases that would work, but in most it would not, they're really just taxing themselves. So, you know, they're going to Snyder's and they're taxing themselves. And they don't get to export it to people who are coming in, like Minneapolis does or St. Paul or Bloomington. I mean, we absolutely can export taxes to other people as they come in. So they wouldn't really get to export it. So I think you still are kind of hitting those people, even if you're going on some lower measure. So, I mean, to me it seems like, and I agree with what Senator Ma was saying, when times are tough, these cities have done these desperate measures. But if we're going to increase LGA, which both bills do, that means we're going the other way now. So we should be relying less on these mechanisms that are not fair and are regressive and don't work and hurt people. But if, you know, if we're going backward and going to cut all these things, then, yep, cities get desperate. But we're actually, I think, in both bills reversing the trend. You guys are clearly putting more money in an LGA, but we are too. So, I mean, neither body here is proposing cuts. So I think we're finally, you know, beginning to turn around and recognizing restoring that local-state relationship. So we would want to get rid of the bad, desperate things that people had to do. So if there was a way to figure out, you know, what you said, I mean, I think we'd be open and hearing what it is, but I just can't figure it out how you can...
You know, in small towns, the ones in my district, I suspect Senator Scoyes aren't any different. You know, there's a lot of surrounding townships that still participate. You know, the lumberyard, which is a big generator of tax revenues in town, but they service a much larger area, so it wouldn't be just people in the city that paid, I think. Representative Carlson.
I was, Mr. Chairman, just going to say that when we talk about the regional centers in greater Minnesota, we do have that same issue in the metropolitan area. My district, much of my district, happens to be sandwiched between two large regional shopping malls. The citizens in those, thinking of two of my communities in particular, shop at those two malls. It wouldn't benefit at all. I've always had a concern about local option sales tax for that reason.
The House has a good idea. I just don't know how we get there.
Blame us.
I mean, we can put it in law, this prohibition, but somebody will introduce a bill.
Mr. Chair, that's true, but I think what we've done in the last 4 or 5 years here is disastrous, honestly. I think we've gone from a couple, but what are we at, 23, 18, something like that? And that's not counting the 43 suburbs that have them that don't want them. You know, every time Representative Larson and I and Representative Carlson and Representative Dabney buy anything, we're paying for a local option sales that we don't want to. And we didn't get to vote on it. Every single time we buy toothpaste, we're paying. But if you set that aside and just say, you know, here's the ones that took the vote, that actually let their people vote on them, we had hardly any. And in the last 4 or 5 years, we've got a whole bunch of them. And that, we can turn that around. And we can change it. And, you know, we can not hear bills and say, didn't you read the rule?
No. Sir, why did we pay local sales tax for dinner tonight?
Yeah.
No, you probably paid.
No, not a restaurant. Not the restaurant.
No. If you had alcohol, you paid the liquor tax, and if you had, depends where you went. You had
the same principle. We have a local sales tax, but not a.
It applies to your restaurant.
Yeah, it's not restaurants. Yep. Sure. Mr. Chair, that demonstrates the ability for a city that has it that can to export it to you, but for your community, your city, little cities, you can't. You know,
Mr. Chair, I go back to the early point that I made, though, is that I like to challenge the local municipalities. I mean, I like to believe that local government doesn't want to impose any more of a burden on their citizens than they have to. And we have yet to show, because I think we've broken the state-local relationship. And we have yet to show that we're willing to come through with some assistance. And I wonder if we could live up to that commitment, if local communities would rather not come for that option. We have yet to do that. And I think that before we rush into something that's a little bit more absolute, we ought to come through on our promise to restore the state-local relationship, and see, because I think that local governments are the ones who are closest to their citizens. And if they, I mean, my city council people know that. If they don't need to, I think they would rather not have to put this kind of, you know, local option question before their citizens, particularly, I think, city council members are particularly sensitive to this issue. So, I mean, my push is let's come through on our part to restore this state-local relationship, and let's test it.
to see. My guess is that if we do come through on the LGA and the state assistance to the local government, that we will be seeing less of these type of requests.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Marty.
I agree with a lot of what Senator Moore was saying, that there will be less. Local governments aren't trying to pay any more, raise any more taxes than they need. The one thing I will suggest you could carry further, though, is they don't want to raise taxes on their own folks any more than they need to, which is why the sales tax is often seen as we can tax somebody else to pay our bills. I think you're right. It's our job to make sure we come through with enough LGA and hope for them, but I think that doesn't neglect, that doesn't eliminate the need to address this issue. Senator Bach, when you were talking about how do we get there, because the legislator is going to come in next year and introduce a bill anyway, I think Representative Marquardt has interesting language here where he prohibits a political subdivision from seeking authority. So legislators might on their own say, hey, I think we ought to have a local sales tax here, but if that's an enforceable provision, they can't come asking us for it.
Mr. Chair.
And I think, you know, we all know that there are people here who are paid lobbyists to go sell these things to cities. And they're making money trying to get cities to come here and ask for them. And I think, you know, I mean, in the St. Paul situation, they've already got it, so our provision doesn't affect them. And Minneapolis already has. It doesn't affect them either. This is going forward. But what I'd say is I do agree that people get desperate and want to do this stuff, but Senator Marty's hit on the crux of the issue is who's going to ask for them? People who can export it. The cities who can't export it are never going to ask. They don't have the ability to tax all these other people coming through because they're not like my city. You know, we have a whole ton of people pouring through my city all the time that we can offload tax burden onto if we had a local option sales tax, which we don't. We could, though. We actually were once granted authority in Minnesota law to have one. And you know what? It didn't even take a referendum. It was a vote of the city council. The city of Bloomington never did it. Just think if they had. Maybe the city that wouldn't have had a property tax for the last 25 years, Senator Larson, but...
Mr. Chair, I wonder if Representative Chesky knows how many years it took for that option to get repealed after it was authorized.
Senator Larson, I think a year. You tell me.
You're right, Representative Chesky. You're absolutely right. It was authorized, and I believe a session later was removed from the law.
Representative Chesky, do you think any of the people that are promoting these might encourage a city to run a referendum before the bill is introduced?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Kind of going down a different track, thinking that it might be difficult for us to prohibit cities from asking their, you know, your city council sends you a resolution and asks you to do something. You know, I mean, you can get the bill introduced and put by protest, but the fact of life is you probably have some responsibility to introduce legislation that your city's asking.
It's not by protest, it's by request.
Ask Representative Solberg. I know he put one in by protest one time.
Oh, really? If he wants to, I think in the House,
under,
they have to put
it under protest.
Protest. Can you do that? Yeah. I didn't know. It's by request.
I wonder if we just kind of come to the conclusion that members are going to introduce bills. And if we just set some criteria maybe to make them harder to pass. Why does it require 50% of a vote to pass? What if we said, pick a number.
Supermajority.
That it has to pass by 65% or 68% or pick a number and make them difficult enough to pass that they might not want to expend a bunch of money trying to promote one unless it is really a project that has incredible community support. Even the deck in Duluth only got 61.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think North Mankato got over 70.
Well, Some of them will happen. But fewer will happen. I think Bemidji's that you have in your bill passed by 41, 43 votes. What was the number?
Small number, right?
40-some votes, I think.
It was very small.
Maybe if we made them a little hard, just acknowledge that it's real hard for us to stop people from introducing bills, but made them harder to pass.
Mr. Chair?
We might accomplish the same thing. Ms. Elenchisky?
What about all the cities that don't get to vote on them? We've already had that.
Still a problem. What about the cities that currently have them?
A lot of ill will with all those cities. We're going to pay for that for 30 years. So, you know, I think if we're going to have them, then everybody gets them. I think we shouldn't have them. And, I mean, I guess we didn't discuss the grandfather language, but I think we all know it's pretty difficult to undo folks that have them. So I guess we didn't touch that. We didn't try to say anyone who has them, we're going to stop them. But, you know, if Mr. Chair, if you would permit Ms. Dalton, I do think it's worth a minute to hear what's my guess is, if, you know, 5 years ago we didn't have hardly any of these, and all of a sudden we've got a ton of them. And I think Senator Mau is right. It's because everyone had their local government aid cut. But we're not cutting it this year. And no matter whatever comes out of here, we're going to have an increase in local government aid. So if Ms. Dalton, if you would permit her, I would like to hear what the growth is in just a couple sentences.
Ms. Dalton, what's the trend?
Mr. Chair, prior to 2005, we had 11, and we are up to 27, with two open authorities that have not been enacted yet.
Are they all for some kind of capital projects?
The new ones, probably the only new one that is somewhat iffy is Mankato was allowed to extend theirs and use up to $1.5 million a year for operations until they have paid off their bonds. But that was an extension of an existing one.
So it was generating more money than they expected?
Mr. Chair, there was some confusion about the original language, which was written to basically say they could raise $20 million and they could use it for capital and operating, and they thought that meant that they could issue $20 million of bonds, and the bonds were issued, but they were also using part of it for capital. And so they had raised $20 million and they couldn't pay off their bonds anymore. So they were required to go back with a reverse referendum to extend it so they could pay off their bonds. And as part of the negotiated settlement, they were allowed to continue to use some of it for operations, but it was limited to a certain amount.
Representative Jessica, is this the one you're hanging your hat on, why North Mankato should get one because Mankato has one?
Well, Mr. Chair, North Mankato passed it. That's why we decided to do it. Mankato, I have to say, you know, I should take a moment, and Senator Mwan, Senator Skoy, I think we'll remember, and Representative Simpson, and Senator Marty. I don't know if Senator Marty, I know you were here last year, but I'm not sure which year this was, but Representative Abrams and Senator Pogemiller did the right thing in a very difficult position, which is, I mean, that's my personal view. Mankato was doing something they shouldn't have been. And I think, you know, it was innocent, maybe, that they were paying for operating. They kind of took it a little further than they were supposed to, and it became very difficult. So that situation was sort of a, you know, what are we going to do now kind of thing. And I think Senator Pogemiller and Representative Abrams allowed it to continue and tighten it up and, you know, once they got out of their prom, to turn it back off. And that was, I think, just a misunderstanding from the city what they were supposed to be using it for. It was not a permitted use what they were doing. But to North Mankato, you know, I don't know. That could be that they're saying, look, every time I go into Mankato, I got to pay, and we're next door. I don't know. But they took a vote, and that might be why it passed overwhelmingly. We could ask those legislators who are carrying it.
Anybody else? Thoughts on this subject that's been in front of this committee for a long time. Ms. Dalton, what year did we pass the first one?
Mr. Chair, the very first one was actually the city of Duluth, and that passed before the general prohibition against local sales taxes. Duluth was actually enacted in... I'm looking for my thing. 1973.
Is this one of the general fund?
Duluth is the only city that has no requirement on what they use it for. They may use it for whatever they want to.
I remember when they had it on cars. Mr. Michael, is that right? It wasn't that long ago we took it off.
No, 2001.
Car dealers are in Hermantown today, in my district. They're not in Duluth. One, I think North Star Ford is still in Duluth, but I don't know if there's another one. I think they're all up over the hill in Hermantown.
Mr. Chair, 1973, I was living in a village deep in the mountains of Laos. No electricity, no running water.
No local option sales.
In a hut.
No
local option sales tax. But literally, thatched hut, dirt floor, bamboo sidings. Literally, 1973.
Sir Ma, are there ever days when you think you were better off then?
Yes.
Anything else on local options? I think we know where the house is at, and we'd like to help you get there, but we're probably just not sure how. But I do think it's worth us spending a little time thinking if there's some way we can maybe make them a little more difficult to pass. Might help us accomplish our mutual goal. I think they've tried to tighten them up. They're trying to tighten up what they can be used for, the regional nature thing. And we went from community centers, and then we discovered libraries were regional, and now we've discovered trails are regional. And I don't know, what else have we got in here that's regional now?
Yes.
Ball fields and
hockey rinks
and swimming pools. So I think the original definition of regional is being stretched a bit from when this committee probably dealt with it. They intended it to be as regional. Mr. Dalton, anything to add on this subject?
Mr. Chair, the one thing you've never done, at least not consciously, is a swimming pool. You've taken them out in the past.
Not yet.
Senator Vaughn, Mr. Chair, the House gave former Speaker Anderson a levy for a pool, though. Sales, a levy for a swimming pool. I don't know how he pulled that off.
Representative Lincheski, when that
probably
happened,
know all about it.
When that happened, Representative Anderson was the Speaker of the House. It was there. I think Representative Carlson, that sounded about accurate.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Marty.
In the House language, I'm just reading the summary here. I'm warming up to this idea of the prohibiting the political subdivision from seeking authority. Then if the public really felt, you know, it wouldn't be, I mean, legislators could still introduce stuff because we can't stop that, but if the public in a community really felt this was essential, they could rise up and demand their legislators do it. But there is some merit to having the cities and local governments be restricted from doing any using any money.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lincheski?
Can we have Ms. Dalton before she... Are you leaving?
No, I'm not.
She hasn't been discharged yet.
I just want to make sure, Mr. Chair, in all this... LGA and local option, and you know, when we get into taconite and all that stuff, I want you to know what Miss Dalton did in graduate school. Do you know what she did? What she worked on in graduate school?
Representative Jessica, I knew Miss Dalton before you, but I don't know what she did in graduate school.
You know what I did in graduate
school? You know what your what was your big thesis on?
My master's thesis was on developing economic models for local government finances.
So
in the mountains of Laos.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Do you remember the legislature that ever read your thesis?
In Northeast Minnesota.
Northeast
Minnesota. Yes. So, Mr. Chair, honestly, and I know you feel this way about the Senate staff, we have the most incredible staff, and we have incredible resources,
And whether it's local option or LGA, we got the people here to figure this out. We can make this work because, really, these people, as you know, same in the Senate, these are the people the rest of the country looks to for expertise on these issues. And Minnesota has preferred to equalize, opposed to picking winners and losers. And this is our opportunity, if we're going to begin funding again, to reverse that trend.
Sir, Squay.
Well, Mr. Chair, as I watched Ms. Dalton get ready to answer the question of what she did in graduate school, I was sympathetic.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scully, I was afraid that Representative Lencheski knew that I also worked for the Natural Resource Research Institute and did marketing studies on bait leeches.
I did not know that.
Representative Dietrich is really missing out tonight.
Yes.
Senator Scully suggested that maybe making it a supermajority at the legislature. So it would have to be a really good idea.
Mr. Chairman, there have been proposals along that line for other taxes that are generally rejected. You know, there was a movement a few years ago that you'd have to have 60% of the legislators passing any increase in taxes. I'm not sure that would be a precedent if you want to set.
Manson, if you have any thoughts about how we could tighten this up so we don't have to deal with this every year?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I had some comments, but I don't want to disrupt the progress we're making.
Mr. Manson, you know, as longer we sit here, somebody's going to come up with an idea nobody thought of. And then it'll be named after them, right, Senator Marty?
That's right.
Well, I guess we've exhausted that. Ms. Dalton, section 34.
Mr. Chair, section 34 takes us away from local sales taxes. This deals with an exemption for motor vehicle sales, or from the motor vehicle sales tax. It allows a charitable organization that holds a Minnesota vehicle dealer license to give a motor vehicle to an individual without the transfer being subject to the sales tax. The only organization that this will apply to will be the Greater Twin Cities United Way. There are some other organizations that give motor vehicles to their clients. They are already exempt under another provision of law because they aren't required to hold this dealership license because the United Way does a lease-to-own program. Back to local sales taxes. Section 35 is allows the city of Duluth to increase its food and beverage tax from 1.5% to 2.25% to pay for the expansion of the deck.
And the Senate has the same provision, Mr. Chair.
Do we have it, Ms. Ellen, do we have it exactly the same?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Because I thought in the Senate Tax Committee, with the way the bill was drafted, it said pay off $38 million. And I thought I'd change it in the Senate bill to say up to $38
million. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, that is correct.
And did the House find the same wisdom?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
The council's good, aren't they?
Very good.
Ms. Dalton, do we know, did the House do up to $38 million in the event that they decided they wanted to downsize their project?
Mr. Chair, no, the House actually went with the exact dollar amount that the City of Duluth gave us in their bill.
So the City of Duluth would have no option but to issue $38 million?
$37,931,000.
I don't know, but.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Yours looks better.
Better? I think the Senate's going to win one.
Section 36 is an expansion of the sales tax for the City of Bemidji, allowing it to also use it not only for the parks and trails, which were initially authorized, but also to use it for, I believe it's a hockey arena.
We're asleep on this one.
Mr. Chair, the Senate had a similar provision but limited the city's share of the cost that could be spent and the bonding authority to $40 million instead of the $50
million. Why, do we remember why we have a $10 million difference?
Mr. Chair, during committee, there was testimony and questions of whether they actually, the city itself was going to raise the $50 million, and I believe that you asked the city officials whether they needed all of that money, and they expressed that no, they could get by with this amount.
Was that like Chesky?
I went another
one. Senate language? $10 million
Mr.
of local
Chair, they
sales
said
tax.
That? They said that? This just backs up what Senator Marty's saying. Because if they came one place 50 and you just said, hey, can you do it with 40? And
well,
they said
the
yes.
Bill, I think the bill said 50. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, the bill is introduced and her did say 50, but there was some testimony that they would perhaps receive additional funds from outside sources and would not necessarily
some
need it
info.
To be part of the city's share. And I think they were happy to get the 40.
I tell you what, if I was a local city official in Bemidji and my referendum passed by 40-some votes, I'd be glad to get 42.
Yeah.
Ms. Dalton, comment on this?
Mr. Chair, the House language actually says up the city's share up to $50 million spent on the event center. So the $50 million in our bill is a limit on what can be spent on the event center, and there is no limit on they can spend up to that, but it's the city's share of whatever that $50 million cost is.
We'll need to do a little bit of work there, probably.
Section 37 is a new local sales tax. This is for the city of Crookston, and this is for up to $10 million, and it's to pay for the movement or the reconstruction of public facilities that have to be relocated in conjunction with the city's flood control plan.
Mr. Chair, the Senate has a similar provision, but the uses in the Senate bill are the capital cost of the construction, not necessarily the relocation.
Read my next section. Section 38 is the...
Senator Squay, do you have any comment on the differences there?
Well, I was sitting here pondering that. Right at the moment, but I want to figure out what's going on. I need to check the senator's thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, the Senate just kind of narrowed up a little bit, and I don't know that we're right, but we did try to, the ones we put in, we tried to tighten them up a little bit, but I don't know if we're right or not.
Mr. Chair, I believe the Senate actually has the original language. Because I do believe the first one did include the recreational center, and we had a discussion with the representative on our side, and he said, you know, and we thought this actually tightened it up because what he said was there were two ice arenas that were needed to be moved, and it wasn't going to be a whole rec center. It was, you know, that could include other things. It was just going to be the two facilities that were being moved.
So whose proposal would cost more money?
I believe both are still limited to the same amount.
Senator Skoy, can we assign you to that task?
Both of those.
Maybe, Mr. Chair. Chair, being that Senator Stump is a little hard to get a hold of, maybe we should check with Representative Lee.
Yeah.
Representative Markworth, can you check with Representative Leader and see what he would like us to do, if anything? There's just enough different, Madam Chair, they could fall out. We couldn't come to an agreement. North Mankato.
Section 38 is the local sales tax for the city of North Mankato, and the House bill includes the bill as it was introduced.
Mr. Chair, the Senate limited the uses to only the local share of the Trunk Highway Interchange Project and then regional parks and hiking trails, and subsequently also reduced the bonding limit to $4 million and the termination to coincide with that. Mr. Chair, the Senate also has the extension of the Cook County local option sales tax to allow Cook County to use its current local option sales tax to pay for three new uses, and it requires approval of the voters by the end of this year, and the bonding amount is limited to not to exceed $14 million. The Senate also has a provision for the Proctor local option sales tax, which extends Proctor's current local option sales tax for a variety of uses, and this was the bill as introduced. On page 50, the Senate has a provision for the Thief River Falls Community Center exemption. This would be a retroactive sales tax exemption for materials and equipment relating to the construction of a community center in that city.
Representative Chesky, you've seen this provision before. Members, I had a good conversation with Senator Stump on Tuesday morning, and he was on the steps of the Capitol with his wife, and they were taking pictures of their grandchildren with Senator Stump about 7 o'clock in the morning. And I think all of you realize he was going in to have surgery on Wednesday, the next day. And he said, "I'd appreciate it if you could watch out for my stuff." And I said, "Well, what are you thinking about?" And he said, "That Thief River Falls sales tax exemption." He said, "You know, I would really be a hero if I could bring that home." I think it's been in the tax bill in previous years. Council? Yes. How many times?
At least three.
Isn't it about time the House agreed this was a good idea? I mean, Senator Stump is laying in the hospital tonight. I hope he's not watching us.
That wouldn't be good for him.
But just in case he is watching, wouldn't it be something if we adopted this? This was the first provision we adopted.
That would be something.
It might really speed his recovery.
Chair Bach.
Representative Simpson.
It seems like we have heard this before, but it seems like that every time we've heard it, the story always comes out that the money that was given to the city to build this was donated. So it's getting a sales tax redemption on a building that the money was donated to the city for the building, if I'm not incorrect. So I think the House has always had just a wee bit of a problem with that.
It's Representative Dietrich.
Is that why Senator Stump might have said he'd be a hero?
He would be a hero.
Could be it.
I think we should, we maybe should look into that and see if there's some reason that the House hasn't been willing to take this in all these years. Council, how many years has this been in the tax bill?
At least three, possibly four.
20 years from now, I guess.
And Council, how much money is it?
It's not.
Interest.
Retroactive.
350,000 in sales tax. That was a big building.
Senator,
that's
Bob,
why they keep bringing it back.
Representative Simpson?
Well, maybe this is one that could be negotiated too, you know, like some of these others. If $50 million would be acceptable, $40 million would work. Maybe $50,000 would make you a mini hero or something.
And you might not bring it back.
Right, yeah.
Maybe they'd put a chainsaw carving of Senator Stump out there instead of a bronze statue.
That would be good.
That'd be good, though. Yeah. If it was made of cedar, it would last a long time. Senator Stump did ask me about this the day before he went in, so.
He left town right after.
Mr. Chair, I would note that it's retroactive to July 1, 2002, which would have been when it was completed.
The House Council is right then. We should have interest on it.
Oh,
the city's been out this money. Then, you know, the longer you don't take this, the more it's going to end up costing. Someday I'm sure you're going to see the Senate's wisdom on this. Let's talk about Clearwater. As much as I would like to adopt this as our first position, I suggest some resistance. So rather than get a House position against it, I think we'll take a pass.
Mr. Chair, the Senate authorizes Clearwater, which did obtain voter approval in 2006, to impose a half-cent sales tax for a variety of projects, including a pedestrian bridge. That was actually some language that was changed differently from the bill as introduced, and limited bonding to $15 million and a termination date of 20 years. That was Senator Koch's bill.
Representative Lencheski, it appears like Clearwater's already passed this one.
Mr. Chair, maybe we're just thinking about this here. Maybe Representative Marquardt can comment. We thought we had everybody who approved them in, so this is news to me.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we heard this bill. We did not. I think this was introduced very late.
Who is this?
Representative Bruce Anderson. I talked to the mayor, but I guess I don't remember it being approved at the November election. But I think that was introduced late after we had heard all the local sales tax bills. I remember talking with the mayor, but I didn't remember that it was voter approved. This is voter approved.
Mr. Chair, if you recall, there was a lot of testimony regarding the pedestrian bridge. Specifically, that was what the community was most interested in and most supportive of.
Council, here's what I remember.
To say how many.
The mayor came in my office and looked around the room and said, do you hunt out of Thunderhook Fly-ins in Armstrong, Ontario, with Jerry and Rudy? And I said, matter of fact, I do. Now, there's a mayor that did his homework.
Mr. Chair, I guess this would meet the criteria we set as the few that snuck in the door this year, so we probably would accept this. Yeah. I do remember that.
that's how we decided.
It says your election required.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure when the bill was introduced in the House that it had a retroactive election date. I don't think we knew that it had, that the city had already held an election.
Maybe we should.
We would have added it if we would have known.
I will just tell you, I had a conversation with Senator Koch in the Senate retiring room today. And what I remember her telling me was she doesn't like these local option sales taxes, and if the city hadn't passed it first, she wouldn't have put the bill in.
That's the problem.
That's what she told me. That was today. So I got a pretty good feeling it passed. Like we've expressed on our spreadsheet.
Which solves the problem. It passed. And I expected it. Yeah, we did.
There does become kind of an entitlement mentality once they've passed the voters. Okay, we know about Clearwater. I've been there. They got a very good restaurant. Center Square? Good restaurant, isn't it? Right on the corner. On the shortcut across the number 10. Yeah. Was it Mark? You ever eat there?
I have many times.
Mr. Chair, is that a truck stop?
Yes.
It's a truck stop.
Burger Brothers.
Mr. Chair, since all the conferees appear to eat there.
We should go on a field trip.
I think that
chef.
Center Juan, I have you been there, Center Marty? I think you're all going to need to take us there for dinner because it seems like most everyone else has been there before we decide on this provision.
Can we go for lunch?
Tomorrow afternoon.
Because the traffic at rush hour between up 94 between here and there is pretty brutal.
How long does it take to get there?
It's mile marker 178, so that's...
Which means nothing to us.
41, 22, 63 miles.
63 miles.
How long does it take?
Well, it depends on the traffic, Mr. Chair, but it's 63 miles.
Mr. Chairman, field trip. I think it's open 24 hours.
Let's go.
Yes.
Go right now.
Take a recess, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
A 10-minute recess like this.
No, Mr. Chair, we keep making progress like this. I'm sure I will be driving through Clearwater tomorrow afternoon just about 1 o'clock.
Mr. Chair, my daughter-in-law used to work at that restaurant for a short time.
Oh, really?
Sounds like a legend.
Live in Becker.
Last time I stopped there, there were two senators having lunch there. Current sitting senator. So maybe we check into whether they actually approved a referendum in advance, but I believe they did.
Oh, they have to do
it. We just never knew that.
We have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least the House will have it.
Okay. Council?
Mr. Chair, the Senate authorizes Cloquet to impose a half-cent sales tax for a variety of construction projects mostly related to park and recreation and pedestrian improvements. This is different than what was introduced. It halves the amount of bonding from $15 million to $7.5 and changes some of the uses.
There were some additional uses. I believe there's some industrial park development, and we kind of tried to take out the stuff that didn't look regional. And you can argue whether some of this stuff is regional, but I believe the council request was $15 million.
It was $15 million, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynchesky.
Ms. Dalton. This one keeps returning. But Ms. Dalton, are these the same uses we've seen in the past? Seems like it's changing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Cloquet is another city that has been in multiple times over the last 3 or 4 years. And yes, there has been a change every year in what they want to use it for. The newest things this year, which I'm not sure are in, I believe probably were taken out, were a pool, soccer, utilities to the industrial park, and to repay industrial park bonds were the newest uses.
They went ahead with some of the infrastructure on the industrial park and now would like a revenue stream to pay the bonds. The Senate didn't think that was that good an idea, so we took it out. next.
Mr. Chair, the Senate authorized Cook County to impose an additional lodging tax of up to 1% and a 3% emissions and recreation tax on emissions to entertainment and recreational facilities and rental of recreational equipment. The proceeds from both of these taxes must be used to fund a new Event and Visitors Bureau, which is in line with what previous authorization is for lodging taxes under the statute. And it also provides that the Board of Commissioners must review the budget and the taxes terminate 10 years after their initial imposition.
Representative Lencheski, if we could sometime maybe towards the end of next week, I would like to, if we could find time, have the Cook County resort community come down and talk to us about this. They're really struggling with the shoulder seasons in the fall and in the spring. And those of you that represent resort communities understand that. And they would like to develop some kind of a visitor and convention bureau like larger cities have, and of course don't have the resources to pay for it. So they're kind of willing to tax themselves and their visitors to try and attract something for the shoulder season, some kind of events, concerts type thing, somewhere that they can go out and promote some visitorship during those shoulder seasons. It's an interesting proposal that they have, and I suggested to them the 10-year sunset so that we could see, and I think it actually probably could be less, so that we could come back and see if the residents of Cook County still supported it at some time. But I think, it's a great tourism area, the North Shore is, but there's only 5,000 people live there, and they really struggle to build the public infrastructure with only 5,000 residents. And so I'd like the committee to consider this, but I don't think you should without kind of hearing the proposal. I don't know if you heard it in the House Tax Committee or not, but Representative Marquardt, do you remember?
Oh. We heard it in property taxes.
But this was one of Representative Dill's bills. That didn't even get up to the sidewalk near the door.
That door that's slamming shut.
But maybe we didn't.
We're getting further apart.
Slid a little.
But I think that would be good just to hear that. And I don't know if we flushed it out enough probably in testimony and so forth.
But it is a different kind of proposal than we normally see.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
I do think, thinking about how the other convention and visitors bureaus work, they often have a lodging, admissions, and entertainment, right? And or called amusement.
Lodging, basically.
But what is, now this is unique. What is it? So you want to tax recreational facilities and rental of recreation equipment. I think that's breaking new ground, isn't it?
Ski equipment at Lutzen. Ski rentals, mountain bike rentals. I don't know who goes to Lutzen. What else do they rent up there? That's what they're thinking. They're just looking for some way to put a little pot of money together to develop their own little visitor and convention bureau so they can try to promote their region. Their region does well during the normal tourist seasons up until the leaves fall off the trees. And then they really struggle until they get snow at Lutzen. And then once the snow melts, the first of April, they have nothing until you get into opening a fishing season or Memorial Day. So they've got some pretty big shoulders on both ends. So I'd like to have them down to kind of lay it out. And, if we don't do it, we don't do it. If it's just too new a ground, that's one thing. But I would like to have them have an opportunity to kind of tell us what they're thinking about.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
I think it's the rec facilities and rental of rec equipment that's the new ground part. But do you know where Cook County is on the lodging tax now? Are they lower than others, or are they at the, I think, who's the highest? Is it Minneapolis? And do you know where you are?
The problem with the Cook County lodging tax today is, and I'm going to try to get this right, and if I'm wrong, I'll get you the right information. I believe they have 3% like everybody else. But they use 2% of it, I believe, to pay off the bonds for the golf course up there. Superior National?
Is that over?
And I don't know how many years that's of that is left, but they actually have special authorization to use 2% of their lodging tax.
Mr. Chair, the highest lodging tax is Bloomington at 7%.
So they have two only? And that's what the music for, right? Yeah, they actually have 2%, and it's all used for the golf course.
2%. Yeah, you know, because when I was thinking about it, I thought it was Minneapolis or Bloomington or St. Paul. I know when those communities debate lodging taxes, they're always aware of each other's because they argue that we're competing against each other for convention business and hospitality bed nights and that kind of stuff. And I just, you know, I don't know how that affects you. It sounds like you're way low, but
Bloomington has 7.
Yeah, you've got it there.
Cook County has 2. Duluth has 30 rooms or more, has 5.5. Minneapolis, 50 rooms or more, has 6. Rochester has 4. St. Cloud has 5. St. Paul, 50 rooms or more, has 6. So.
And Mr. Chair, I mean, and I don't know if that's in the tax handbook, which I'm here too somewhere. That's a great pile of information, but beyond that,
it's a great resource.
And you know, maybe Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael knows this, but some of these too, I mean, they have them, but they have portions of them dedicated to things like you were just saying. And I know like Bloomington has a bunch of theirs dedicated to pay for Mall America Phase 1. So I mean, people have different things they're going to too, so
yeah, it doesn't all go to tourism promotion,
right? I mean, some of them go to things like paying off parking rooms. So, but
Mr. Chair.
I actually don't think the Cook County lodging and admissions tax is that strange for a convention center. Right. Mr. Chair, can I ask Mr. Michael for just his thoughts on this in general? Because
sure.
I think he, Mr. Michael, would, I mean, do you, can you give us just a minute or two of the history on all these lodging taxes and what they're all used for? I mean, aren't they typically, isn't this how a lot of convention and visitor bureaus are funded? It's released?
The general law allows imposition of a 3% lodging tax to be used for promotion of tourism in the convention bureaus. But the reason why, you know, Minneapolis, Bloomington, et cetera, have these higher taxes is because the legislature has passed special laws authorizing them to fund various activities or facilities. And of course, Minneapolis and St. Paul have other special taxes, sort of in some way, just where they're, you know, they may have an entertainment tax or an amusement tax, which is in some ways what this would be where you're taxing ski rental.
Chair.
Just,
you know, our crack staff, just like yours, has identified that there may be a streamlined sales tax issue with, maybe it's the rental facilities, the streamlined sales. You know, I know Chairman Bach and Senator Larson knows that some folks have thought about taxing, you know, one thing, like a building or a product. And you can actually tax it by zip code, but I don't know that you can. Is there a streamlined problem with taxing just rental, recreational rental things in one place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lancheski, I would like to consult more with the department on this, but I think there may be a problem with having a second rate essentially on the
equipment, on renting recreational equipment, because there's some rules in streamlined sales tax related to everybody has to have the same tax base, and you're only allowed one rate, one state rate and one local rate within a taxing jurisdiction, unless, except for some very specific things like utilities and motor vehicles and things like that. So I think there may be a problem that we would fall out of compliance with SSTA if we if you had an additional tax on recreational equipment.
Even if it's something that's not for sale?
The tax on leasing recreational equipment is sales. It's part of the sales tax base right now. So it, you know, there are exceptions to what we can take out of, you know, that we can tax at a different rate that's in the existing sales tax base. I wouldn't say definitively you can't do it, but I think there's a question raised, and I think we'd have to consult with some of the people in the department to find out if there's a problem with that.
Mr. Manson, do you know offhand the answer?
Mr. Chairman, as Ms. Dalton said, as long as the base is the same as the state and there's only one rate per a taxing jurisdiction, it works under streamline. Now we're thinking that since this really doesn't appear to be in Chapter 297A, I don't know if it's uncodified provision or whatever, that might be outside the streamlined sales tax, as it may not be an issue. They're mainly focused on 297A that impacts all many different retailers. So kind of like the fur tax when we put it in a different chapter as a gross receipts tax. It's not looked on very favorably, but this is so isolated to one, you know, one county that it might not be an issue. So I think as long as it's out of 297A, that chapter, that should be okay. But
Mr. Chair,
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Senator Buck. You know, I think the one thing that we want to be careful of is that indicated in statute that 95% of it must be used for local tourism or tourism promotion. And sitting on the Minnesota Tourism Council, you know, those dollars are heavily used for that promotion of the events and of the venues. So I think that we need to be a little careful that we don't start letting this 95% get watered down and used for items that are maybe more inclined to be capital expenditures or different types of uses, I guess. I'd be a little concerned about that.
And I believe in the case of Cook County, it's all being used. Now, none of it's being used for promotion. I believe it's all being used to pay for the golf course bonds.
No, that's not right.
They had special legislation to do that.
They didn't.
We'll do a little more research.
Sorry.
And the language we have in the bill doesn't actually quite work either. There's some couple of technical changes. Ely.
Mr. Chair, Ely.
Ely had authorization once before in the early 90s, and they ran it to a referendum and it failed. And they have not been able. Well, I remember the current mayor was down here at the time and promoted the idea of a local option sales tax for the city of Ely. And it went to a referendum. And also in that same election, somebody challenged him for mayor because the incumbent mayor was getting a little far out in front on the sales tax. And the local option sales tax turned out to be kind of a referendum on the incumbent mayor, and he lost his election by one vote, if I remember correctly. And the sales tax failed by a larger margin.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
We don't want you to lose because of this provision. So we'd like to help the House is happy to remove this so that you're not in jeopardy later.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Markworth.
Was one of the person's last name Salerno?
Frank Salerno was the incumbent mayor.
I have to tell you, I teach government, and I saved that story. And it was in the Fargo Forum, and I always ask my students, how do you break a tie if there is a tie in an election? You know, do you hold a re-election, whatever? And I give them all sorts. And someone will say, you know, you flip a coin, and I say, oh, come on, and I just keep going. But that's how you decide is in the state law, it's a draw of lots. So it can be flipping a coin or whatever. But who was the, was that our Tesher or who?
Mike Forsman.
That's it. Yep. I remember. Anyway, every year
was
I use that story.
Was it a tie?
Yes, it was a tie, and they flipped the coin, and then I forget which one won. But then I suppose at that point, once a
mayor lost.
Okay, once a winner would be called, then the other one could ask for a recount once a winner is determined, and then I don't know what happened on the recount, but I just saved the story, but it was easy. Yes, Salerno and, Forsman.
And Mike Forsman went on to be a county commissioner today.
Well, this is the Salerno lost.
Yeah, oh.
So we want to take this.
I can add another chapter to that story that we actually got brought up. No.
How many times do you think elections end in a tie?
We had one, Mr. Chairman, in the city of Robbinsdale a few years ago.
Really?
The city of...
Yeah, I recall they flipped a coin.
The city of Gilbert had one 5 years ago or so, and they flipped a coin.
Mr. Chair, the city of Hawley for the mayor's race. They flipped the coin, and the incumbent was defeated. He asked for a recount, and then he won by one vote. One ballot that they had counted as spoiled, they then counted for him.
Wow. So one vote does matter.
That's another part of my lesson also, is one vote matters. Yes.
How long is that lesson plan?
I could dig it out, I suppose. But.
Well, I was thinking of... You know, we kind of run out of things to do. Yeah. Someday we're on TV. You could do it for a much larger audience than a classroom, and it might be a good civics lesson for everybody watching.
It's, of course, Mr. Chair, in statute, but it says it will be drawn by lot, is what's kind of the wording in state law. So it could be a flip of the coin.
So how often do the students get it right?
Usually every time one student gets it right, but no one else believes them until, because we take several answers, and I kind of go over it, and you know, they kind of laugh, oh, yeah, right, flip a coin. And then I come back and read the article, they flip the coin. And the one who won chose, I believe, heads. So there's a, if you ever wind up in a draw, choose heads.
50% of the time you're going to win.
Well,
did anybody examine the coin? Very good guy. County Commissioner. They're both very good men, but I can't imagine ending in a tie.
Well, of course, you can have the Minnesota House tie. I was here when that happened.
A House tie?
67.
Oh, in the body. I think Senator Sparks won election ago, won a Senate district by 5 votes. An entire Senate district.
Mr. Chair, that's when they burned the ballots.
17 ballots got burned.
That's when they... The clerk told another person, because that was when the Wellstone situation, the ones that had Wellstone votes, they said discard these ballots, and they thought meant literally eliminate. I think they were burned or thrown away.
Took
and
them
so
home and throw them in the fire.
Then when they, so there's a big dispute over that.
Can't make this stuff up.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks was known as Senator Landslide for a long time.
And Senator Schwab went on to be the powerful lobbyist for the Minnesota School Boards Association.
That's right.
Earning much more money than a state senator. I think it probably worked out for both of them, as things often do.
You know, Mr. Chair, there's a House member, House member whose attitude in going the last election was either way he wins. either he's back here or life is better.
There is life after the legislature, I've heard, by a lot of people who've left here.
He's joking.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bach, would that mean after 10:30 at night on Friday evening, too?
Isn't this fun?
That's just what I was
wonder
thinking.
What day we're going to get a target.
It won't be too soon, sir.
Won't be soon enough?
No, it won't be soon enough.
I bet if we got our sixth conferee in here, things would speed up.
Mr. Chair, are you talking about Reverend Dietrich or your proposed sixth conferee?
Well, the Senate's sixth.
When are you going to bring a sixth?
I think we talked at dinner that we're very seriously considering your proposal. And speaking of sixth, Representative Markwart, I personally delivered the Citizens Bill jackets to Senator Langseth. To his office. And I didn't look on the introductions today if it was introduced or not, but I actually personally handed them to him. And Miss Blair was in attendance. Mm-hmm. So she probably could tell you if whether they got signed or not. I didn't watch them sign them, but.
Mr. Chair, it's probably taken a while to get all the co-signatures on.
Yeah.
But
how many senators are there?
So Mark, we only do four co-authors.
Oh.
Council, do we have any more work?
If you'd like, we could finish the article.
The 10 minutes that's still going.
The House didn't want to adopt Ely then yet?
Never.
Hold on.
How about Winona? The mayor of Winona was down to see me this week. Council, what's Winona about?
Mr. Chair, the Winona sales tax would be to pay the city-borne cost of construction to connect the streets to Highway 61 and 43, and bonding would be capped at $8 million. And the tax will terminate at the early of 5 years or when they actually raise that revenue.
It's unfortunate that our cities have to come here to fund transportation projects with local option sales taxes, but I mean, I understand why they do. Representative Chesky?
Well, Mr. Chair, I agree. I mean, I didn't actually realize until we were here that the North Mankato is doing it, and Winona's doing it. And by the way, Winona's one of two cities that's ever had a local sales tax and let it expire, Wilmer and Winona. They've been good actors. But so you got that, and then as we get in the TIF stuff, we've got interchanges, and these are all sort of like what Senator Wah was saying earlier about local government. These are all because we're not paying for transportation. These are all bad ways to pay for transportation. Local sales tax, bad way. TIF, bad way. You know, Senator Bach, why don't we just see if we can't get that transportation funding done in the tax conference committee this year? What do you think? Because it's all about taxes.
Wouldn't people be surprised?
That's what we should do. Got everybody jumping through hoops because the Minnesota isn't funding the transportation system correctly.
You want to hold off on Winona in case we have a transportation?
Might have to.
Piece in here?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Markwart.
I think on the city of Winona, they had a failed referendum, I think, on this just last year. But that also brings up another point that we've talked about. If we were to allow local option sales taxes to move forward, is that many of them lump several items in one vote. I mean, they've got several projects and it's one vote. And I think if we were to move forward, we would require them to separate each project. And that's something we talked about. You know, they get these huge, and they got all these projects, and you just don't know. And I think the city of Winona, what they've done now is they had a few more projects. I think now they limit them down to just this one road project now. I think they had theirs defeated last fall.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Maybe if we had a supermajority and had separate votes. What else could we do? Said if you passed your referendum before you came to the legislature, we wouldn't consider it.
That's a good one.
So you don't want to do Winona yet either? Okay. Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, we are on the last section of the sales tax article. For both bills, it is a study of sales and use tax. The House provides that the Commissioner of Revenue will do a study of changes needed in the current sales tax system to move it to more of a true tax on all final consumption, with no taxation of intermediate business inputs, in a way that minimizes administration and collection issues while keeping the changes revenue neutral.
Mr. Chair, the Senate creates a joint sales and use tax subcommittee consisting of 10 legislative members, five from each body, to be appointed by the chairs of the tax committee and include at least one member of the minority party. And the subcommittee is to do similar things as the revenue study, in looking at revenue productivity and equity of the current sales tax, the eroding of the sales tax, and looking at the sales tax base, the tax burdens on individuals and businesses, and recommend alternative structures, administrative and compliance burdens, and examine and report the broadening and the idea of broadening the sales and use tax base in conjunction with a lower rate. And this joint subcommittee is required to file a report no later than March 30th, 2008.
Mr. Chair, we heard a number of study bills this year, and I just don't like elected officials doing them. And the reason why, I mean, our committees do that. You could have a sales tax subdivision, as could I. But when we want to get a study, just the facts, I don't like legislators doing it, because it just becomes political. To me, it doesn't seem like it becomes purely fact-based. We have other members who've got some bills, too, that they designed them full of House and Senate members, and I wasn't a fan of them because they had elected officials in them. My concern, it seems we'd want the best tax experts we could get for the money, whether they're here in Minnesota or elsewhere. Because this sales tax issue is huge for all of us. We have an eroding sales tax base. We have a huge problem, and we're not taxing enough of the economy. Taxing part of the goods instead of all the goods, and almost no services. We're turning to a service economy, and so as income tax receipts drop, the baby boom retires, and sales tax is just eroding all on its own because we're not taxing the full economy. And I think it seems clear to me that you'd like to do the same thing, expand the base, lower the rate, get all the problems worked out over time. I've actually talked to the governor about this personally, and he seems open to beginning to work on this. I've talked to the Speaker Kelleher about it. And I think most people bipartisanly know this is a problem. It just seems when we put elected officials into it, it makes it harder. So I hope you'd just be open to thinking about, does it have to be elected officials? It's just my concern.
Well, I think you get some buy-in, you know, and maybe we create some kind of a hybrid with fewer of them. But
maybe.
Mr. Manson, would you contract this work out, or under the House proposal, or what would the department suggest?
Mr. Chairman, I think I talked generally about studies earlier and about, you know, the resource issue, and you had a good idea, I thought, about looking at a list of studies and maybe what the timeline should be. I think in this instance on the sales and use tax study, I think this one we would do in-house, pretty much, I believe. Its question is, you know, is legislative involvement valuable or not, and, you know, there's different thoughts on that, and so I guess it's, you know, just something to consider, but I don't think we would use a consultant to do this one unless it's for some programming or something, for some data we might need, but not to really do the report or the analysis.
Well, I think we both agree we'd like to do something in this area. That's a good start.
Senator Skoy. Representative Lenchesky, you know,
We have a fair amount about the membership on these studies over the differing groups that we've looked at, and one of the roles that the legislators and the legislature have power to convene, and that is the one thing we can do, is bring experts together and gather the information. So I think in that capacity, having legislators is valuable. The other thing that I think it does is, if you have House Senate members working, you disperse the information between the two bodies, of course, and get some buy-in and get some legislative buy-in, which is what it's going to take in the end to do this. So
I have thought about this
a fair amount, and I see value in legislators involved. Maybe as Senator Box would be something. Leaders have the capacity to gather all the experts in a room, work through it.
So I don't know how that is
best. It's something we should think about.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
I think maybe process-wise, honestly, I was thinking about it differently, Senator Scoia, as I was thinking experts would go off and do the study and provide the data so legislators would decide how to deal with it and solve the problem. So I was separating them. And we had a member introduce a bill, and I worked on something with Mr. Michael and Ms. Dalton early in the session to, do a bill to expand the sales tax base, lower the rate, and actually do a low-income credit on the end to take the regressivity out. And I actually never introduced it as a bill, but Mr. Michael and Ms. Dalton did some preliminary work, kind of here's all the list of stuff that could go in or out. And then Representative Hortman actually introduced a bill. And we all need to deal with this, but the Department of Revenue, they actually even called and said, are you going to hear that one? Because if we got to do a fiscal, a revenue estimate, it's going to take about 2 months. And I made the decision not to hear Representative Hortman's bill because I didn't think it was fair to put the department through the process, because you have to literally take every service that's not taxed and calculate, if you tax that service and what business inputs are in there and how do you take them out, and it just seemed like a huge undertaking mathematically for all the goods and services in the economy. And that just doesn't seem something legislators would be doing. And so I was looking at, the study would go get the information, and then the tax committees would try to solve the problem. So I think we're actually not that far apart, because we're thinking about it differently. So it seems like you're saying you wanted it to be these folks to be the decision makers, and I wouldn't disagree. But I was over more kind of how do you collect the data to allow decision makers then to actually work in the facts instead of the rhetoric of the debate. But, so maybe we could work something out.
Representative Lencheski, I was wondering on the legislative bingo card.
I haven't seen that.
Who has the C word? Sales tax on clothing.
Oh.
Anybody has it?
Well, Senator Bach,
somebody should have put that one in the middle of the card.
That's actually interesting, because we talk about that a lot in the House, in the Tax Committee. We have Representative Dorman and others over the years, and
he's not here, so
he's not here, but he was on.
We could attribute it to him.
Well, I don't know who's carrying that these days, but I think that Ms. Dalton, and I don't want to misquote her, so she can say, but I think interestingly, if you added clothing, it actually makes the horribly regressive sales tax slightly more progressive. Is that true, Ms. Dalton?
I think the staff would characterize it as it makes it less regressive. It will still
less
be
regressive.
A regressive tax,
yes.
but sales tax on clothing is less regressive than our current tax base.
Mr. Michael says if you cut the rate.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Dalton, does that less regressivity get improved if you put limits on bottom $10 or $25 or $50 or something?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scully, it would, but then you run into streamlined sales tax issues.
Mr. Chair.
credit back.
Representative Winchesky.
Senator Skoy, that's why we've thought it, and some of us have thought about it, not everybody here would agree. We've thought about it as a low-income credit because administratively, even setting aside streamlined sales, you've got the clerk, you know, at the store taking the money, trying to, you know, okay, you know, so, I mean, people will figure out quickly, I can go in there 10 times and make $50 purchases in increments at once for $500. And it just seems sort of an administrative nightmare for the retailer, and it's complicated. It seems like the better way is just to have an income tax credit on the lower decile in the income tax system and just solve it if you were going to go there.
Senator Marty? This won't be named after a Senate member because these taxes have to originate in the House.
Representative Dorman's name's been used and he's not here anymore.
Yeah. So we name it after him.
Senator Ress suggested to me that she was introducing a bill on this subject. Don't know if she has the jackets yet. Is there a House member here that I could suggest to her might want to carry?
Not her.
Or Senator Ress, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, no, I think Representative Portman.
Not her representative?
I was just announcing it wouldn't be her representative.
Not this one anyway, right?
Senator Carlson.
She has two.
Won't be.
She'd have to choose the other one.
Who is the other one?
Sandy Peterson.
I like Representative Dorman.
That's probably a better choice. Yeah.
Senator Belanger was a big fan of that as well. They would name it after him. In honor. You know, though, Senator Bach, I mean, that's the problem is people hold different pieces of the economy as sacred. And we keep carving out all these pieces. And, you know, I don't know.
Ms. Dalton, how many states have a sales tax?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's 45.
How many of the 45 tax clothing?
Mr. Chair, I actually have some information back in my office on that, but I couldn't tell you right now. I think the majority of them do, although more states have enacted sales tax holidays on clothing.
I think
that's fine. Mr. Manson
has an answer. 40 of them tax clothing.
About?
All but five of them.
40 out of 45. Do we know if they all, if they tax it at the same rate?
No, it's different.
It would be different rates.
Different all.
Whatever the state rate is.
It's whatever the state rate is?
Right. I charge you to testify about the sales tax on clothing.
It would be a way for this committee to find some money.
The Latimer Commission.
Our income tax disappeared.
Run together after that.
Would that be
88
somewhere back?
Stalton, do you know? Would that be considered a tax increase in the governor's eyes?
It was broader than the sale.
Mr. Chair, I would have no idea. I think you should. I would defer to the department on that question.
I'd rather defer to Ms. Cadoon. Is she here?
Yes.
I'm just curious if that would be a tax increase or not.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Chesky?
Well, I think particularly if you lower the rate, make it revenue neutral. You know, that's the key. Expand the base, lower the rate so you don't bring in a new dollar, and then the base grows over time. That's what the income tax does.
Representative Chesky, I'm trying to find a way that you can spend the money in your bill when your income tax is gone.
2 years from now, we should ask the governor's office, Ms. Cadoon,
that's
or others.
That's a tax increase. Mr. Manson, could you find out from the governor's office? That's a considered a tax increase? Is it off the table?
I'll ask him.
We just want to know what the parameters are. We don't want them to, you know, unlike some other chairs that are carrying bills that get them vetoed, I really hope ours doesn't get vetoed. We're going to put all this work into this and then have to come and do it again. Wouldn't be good. Would be good if we could find out, though, if that's considered a tax increase or not.
Getting closer.
Mr.
Senator Squay.
Well, Mr. Chair, I remember the campaign, and I didn't think he signed that budget this time.
I think so.
I don't think he did. I don't think he did. Did he?
No.
I don't think so. Representative Simpson should know.
Pardon? Did the governor sign a no tax pledge this time, or he seems to be been saying he's going to veto any tax increase?
To the best of my knowledge, I don't believe he did.
Senator Marty, do you know?
Mr. Chairman, the Taxpayers League pledge, I thought was a lifetime pledge, and I thought he explicitly said it was not going to apply anymore. In other words, he was backing away from the pledge.
Mr. Chairman, my recollection in the media was that you're correct, but that he was going to follow the principles of it, even though he hadn't signed it.
Is it a lifetime pledge?
It was. The pledge was no tax increase ever.
Ever?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kroenke here somewhere? Is it a lifetime commitment? Is it really?
Yeah,
Representative Lucheska, did you sign that once?
I think that's true.
Representative Lucheska, did you sign that one time?
First time I ran, I believe I did. I think a couple House conferees did, and I think there's some senators who did as well.
At this table?
And you know what? You know what?
I was thinking about it.
I wrote to them and asked my name to be taken off, and they wrote me back and said, no. So they think they're, I don't know who they are, but I think I've even saved it. I could bring it here.
Maybe we could have Representative Kroenke.
No, you know what? I could be wrong. I think the Taxpayers League will take you off. I think Americans for Tax Reform, no, you can't get on.
You think the Taxpayers League will? Isn't that
so?
Isn't that
I think so.
Isn't that who the pledge is in Minnesota, the lead?
Yeah, the lead for it.
Well, they're
can you get off that one?
I think you can. We could ask Mr. Strom, or Representative Kroenke.
Representative Kroenke cruised through here the other night. I saw him go through, so I know he was here. So maybe next time he's here.
Senator Bach.
Representative Simpson.
Thank you. I find it interesting that at least we have a couple people on this side of the table that have signed that tax
pledge. Three of us.
Just hoping there's not three.
We're the moderate side of the table. We're the moderate side. We're the moderate side of the table. Three of us have signed it.
Yeah. Senator, Mr. Chair?
There's three people.
Mr. Chair, I'm an optimist, and I strongly believe that age and wisdom tend to give us a new perspective. And so I'm an optimist, just as our House counterparts have discovered in their age and wisdom that they could change their minds. I'm an optimist, and I think that we are at a turning point in where we're at in the state, and I feel that we ought to give people the room and the flexibility to rethink and to gain a new perspective. And I think as human beings, we all have the capacity to grow and to change as we get more information and learn. And so I know that different people may have taken different pledges, but I think we ought to create that opportunity for people who have done that to come aboard and help us move our state in the direction that is the best for all of our citizens. And I think at the end of the day, regardless of what people have pledged to, we are one Minnesota, Mr. Chair, one Minnesota with a common agenda, which is to take care of all of our citizens. So I think we should create that space.
I raised an issue the other day and some members of the Senate about the joint House-Senate rule on provisions that a conference committee is able to adopt. And the way I remember the discussion, it was you can adopt subject matters that are in either bill or subject matters that are germane to something in your bill. So I'm just wondering, on clothing, we have any reference to tax on clothing in our bill?
Yes.
Sales tax.
Do we have anything on fur?
On fur.
So we, Mr. Michael, what do you think? Do we, we tax clothing and have a, and have it be germane to the provisions in the bill? I think we have a conformity issue on, is it conform? It's in the conformity piece on
fur,
taxing fur.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir, Marty?
I don't think you have any problem with it. There is income tax mentioned in the bill, too.
Okay. We can, we got to help them spending committees along. Looking for some way to get a little closer. Senator Olstein, what do you think of the tax committee?
It's keeping me awake. Nobody else, but I'm pretty much.
Good answer.
Council, where are we at?
Mr. Chair, we finished the sales tax article.
Yay. That was the 10-minute thing.
Oh. How's that for 10 minutes?
2 days.
Jeez. Mr. Chair, the longest 10 minutes I've ever spent.
You could have been on the Senate floor yesterday. That was a long 10 minutes. I wonder how long it was.
What happened?
Senator Larson, you know?
3 hours plus.
3 hours plus? 10 minutes.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it was Senator Marty that suggested we could have held an 8-minute conference committee meeting in the 10-minute recess.
We would have finished the side by side.
Chesky, what do you think? There's something easy we can work on? Representative Chesky had enough for today. Mr. Manson thinks we're...
I'm ready to go.
...making good headway. Maybe if we all went home and rested up, we could do even more tomorrow.
We only have a couple.
We don't have. We don't have that much left.
We have 4 articles. They're doing power.
Council, aren't you guys pretty well along with about the last 30 pages or so? We don't have to go through all that department stuff, do we?
No.
No.
Absolutely. We could agree tonight. We could.
We have a list.
Could we? Yeah. So those of you that are watching, if we throw, if we dump the last 30 pages, will you feel sleep better tonight? The economic development's a pretty big article, so I don't know that we can probably even get started.
Minerals. That's short.
Should we do minerals? Let's do minerals. And then Representative Rukavina and I have to spend a little time together. The House and Senate have some different provisions. Council, what number is it?
67.
Page 67.
This is fun.
I'm
gonna. It's gonna be like Skeeter tires for all of us. The minerals, we're all like, whatever.
Tommy and I are going to work it out.
He's on the board. Goodness, well, you're going to be an expert then. Amazing.
Douglas J., I don't know. Douglas J.
I
don't know. You didn't skip anything.
The name of the
I'm trying to think what his dad's name was.
starts in 1858 might be part of the reason.
That's a good trivia question.
Mr. Chairman, members, page 67. Section 1 is the authorizes the IRRRB to purchase forest lands in the taconite assistance areas. These lands must be held in trust for the benefit of the citizens as the Iron Range Miners Memorial Forest, and the board may use the lands for recreation and economic uses, and the proceeds from the sale of timber or removal of gravel or other minerals from the lands go into a Iron Range Miners Memorial Forest account that's established by the board, and the board may transfer money to the Douglas J. Johnson Economic Protection Fund. And I think this provision is exactly the same as the provision in the Senate bill.
Yeah, and I Representative Rukavina and I both got an email from the commissioner up at the IRRRB, and the Attorney General's office has suggested some slightly different language, maybe that works for the agency. So we'll take a look at whether they have a decent idea or not. I haven't even looked at it yet. But.
Okay, the next sections 2 and 4 of the House bill go together. Section 2 changes the membership of the Iron Range Higher Education Committee. Right now there's 5 members on it, and it adds a 6th member. And what it does is it provides that the 2 members of the IRRRB that are currently on the committee that are appointed by the chair, or should be will be appointed by the chair and not by the commissioner of the IRRRB. And then it adds the president of the Northeast Higher Education District to the committee. And then along with that, it allocates 2 cents per taxable ton to this Iron Range Higher Educational account. And it's to be used for higher education programs, for scholarships, grants, post-secondary students that are attending higher education institutions in the taconite assistance areas. And it doesn't have to be students that are from the area, but it has to be students that are attending any VOTEC schools and those type of for any educational expenses of undergrads and postgrads who attend these institutions that are located in the taconite assistance area. And it starts effective for production in 07, distributions in 08, and thereafter. Going back up to Section 3, it provides 3 cents per taxable ton from each of the production facilities will be distributed to school districts in really the vicinity of the facility, and they're deposited in a fund for building maintenance and repair. But the building is the bill is very specific as to which school districts are to receive the proceeds from the revenues, and makes it very clear that those revenues can't be used to offset state aids or reduce permissive levies. And on page, let me see if I can find it real quick. There's actually, it shows each of the school districts and which mines are close or within them. It's on page 175 of the bill, like the Keewatin and Taconite, what school districts those are, school districts 316 and 319, and then Hibtac, the school districts that where that company is located, and it goes very specific.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the Senate bill also provides an additional 3 cents out of the production tax proceeds to be allocated to school districts, but differs in several ways from the House provision. It distributes the 3 cents to a different group of school districts. It would be distributed throughout all of the school districts in the taconite tax relief area or to any that include a qualifying municipality. So that's a broader distribution than in the House. The Senate bill also specifies that the additional 3 cents would be taken from the production tax escalator. And then within the House bill, there's a specific provision that the additional 3 cent revenue that's distributed to the school district would not be offset
against the state aids. The Senate bill takes a broader approach to the offset, and you'd see on page 70 that section 19 repeals the current law provision under which the offset of education aids for the taconite production tax would occur, and that is a broader application. So there would be an additional distribution to the school districts for other types of aids that had been offset under current law. And then in section 18, there's an appropriation to the Department of Education for that purpose.
Going back to section 6 of the House bill on page 68, that provides that the remainder of the 2008 distribution must be paid to St. Louis County for a grant to the City of Virginia for connecting and replacing certain sewer and water lines. And the first $2 million has already been statutorily set aside. That was done in last year's bill. And this is the remaining money. And I think this is basically the same as the Senate. The Senate language isn't quite as specific, but otherwise it's basically the same.
Right, Mr. Chairman, I think the intention of the distribution is the same, but the House language just kind of amplifies the description of the use.
Section 7 of the House bill appropriates, beginning with taxes payable in 2008 through 2017, from the taconite production tax revenues to the Taconite Environmental Protection Fund and the Douglas J. Johnson Fund, in equal shares, an amount of $500,000 per year. And all that revenue is received under that section shall be used to retire Mesaba East School District 2711 bonds of $9 million, which were issued last year, and $6,250,000 that were issued in March of this year. And the payments will be made to the school district annually on March 1st.
Excuse me.
Representative Kiske.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just going back here on Section 3, mm-hmm. Section 7 on your bill, mm-hmm. school district allocation, the 3 cents, what kind of money does that generate? Do you know, just roughly? What's the tax now?
3 cents would generate about $1.2 million. Yeah. And that would, under the Senate provision, be spread across about, I think, 15 school districts. This will be just under $100,000 a district. Under the House provision, it would be spread in probably 5 districts probably.
Just curious. I just didn't know what 3 cents.
40 million tons current production.
Mr. Michael says you're at $2 something now. So it's a small part of that tax.
Yeah.
Just curious.
Senator Bach.
Representative Simpson.
Why, just for clarification, how is it that your provision would put it into 15 schools and the House provision puts it into 5 schools? Is there a geographical difference in the area, or what's the basis of it?
The Senate provision puts it into the current school funding formula. The taconite taxes are paid in lieu of a production tax, so they get spread in categories. Some go to schools, some go to county, some go to city, just like it was a property tax. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of spread similar. Currently, the school money is spread in, the majority of it is spread taconite relief area wide to all the school districts. And this would add 3 cents to that formula. So every school district would receive, based on their pupil units, an increase in their level of funding. And then there's a smaller portion that does get spread to a smaller number of school districts that have a mine. This is slightly different. I believe it narrows it up even further, so that it would only be the school district right where the mine is would receive this 3 cents, so the other districts wouldn't. So that's, I guess, kind of the crux of it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, is that in lieu of property taxes?
the mining companies do not pay property taxes.
That's what I was,
right.
I was asking. So that's immovable.
Right, but I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. And it actually, it was their request when the legislation was passed decades ago. The mining companies didn't want to pay property taxes. You know, they're multi-billion dollar properties.
Yes, right, yes.
They didn't want to pay because of the nature of the market having its ups and downs. They felt that they were willing to pay based on production. That when they were having a good year selling a lot of ore, they'd be willing to pay more. And then years when sales were down, the tax would automatically adjust down so they'd pay less in those years when there wasn't a lot of production. So it actually was a mining company proposal that the legislature adopted. Now they'll often say, well, we'd rather be on the property tax. We think the property tax would be less than the production tax. But it simply depends on how much tonnage they're producing.
Mr. Chairman, this is an area that back when I was more involved with Kate Love Finance, we never really talked much about. So the money's down. How is it made up then?
These cents per ton are set in law.
Yes, it is.
I'm trying to think of the word. Also, what's the word? There's grandfathered amounts, I think is probably the right word, so they can't fall below a certain amount, even if the tonnage is down. And what ends up happening is the funding that goes to the IRRRB, because some of it goes there to the Economic Development Authority, it becomes the shock absorber. So as production goes up, the agency benefits and has more money to do economic development. As production goes down, the schools, the cities, the counties are held harmless, but the shock absorber becomes the amount of money that goes to the IRRRB, the Economic Development Authority. And that is largely why you've seen members of the Range delegation around here looking for some money for the 21st Century Minerals Fund, because the money coming to the agency with the loss of LTV and the loss of 8 million tons and the loss of Butler taconite and the loss of, I think, about 6 million tons, we've lost a lot of tonnage, and the money comes directly away from the Economic Development Agency because the money to the schools and the counties and the cities is all guaranteed. I think guaranteed is the right word, not grandfathered. There's a guarantee that they get their share. So the money flowing to the IRRRB has been greatly diminished. So that was the whole notion of the 21st Century Minerals Fund when Senator Doug Johnson proposed it. And the initial language said that the IRRRB had to match equally money that came out of the 21st Century Minerals Fund. And the first $20 million that came out of there was matched by the IRRRB. Then the governor unallotted the money that was left, and there's, I don't think there's any money in it today, but the agency did match it. And the thought always was, the money's not at the agency to do these large projects, so let's find a partner. IRRRB have a partner in the state on a 50-50 basis to move forward. That was the rationale of it. And it all happened after some of those mining properties went down, and there just wasn't the money there from an economic development standpoint. That's a pretty unique state agency in that it's funded totally with local dollars. You know, we have state employees and a commissioner that's confirmed by the Senate, even though all of the money is locally generated.
Senator, I was going to say also that I was looking at the tax rates, and from 06 to 07, the 06 production tax rate is $2.20.3, and it's projected to go to 225.8, so that's 5.5 cents. And the House bill uses 2 cents of that for that higher ed and 3 cents of it for the school district. So it uses 5 cents of the 5.5 increase that is projected out there.
So there's a half a penny left that would then be split between the DJJ trust fund and the agency. So very little new money would go to the agency. Mm-hmm. The Senate proposed 3 cents to the schools and 2.5 cents to go be split between the agency and the trust fund.
Yeah.
And Representative Rickabee and I would we don't disagree on the 3 cents. We just don't know exactly how we should do it yet. Representative Lanchesca.
Just thinking about, you've got worldwide competition there. Those mines, the markets are, do these guys ever even weigh in on a 3 cent item, or is there $2 and whatever cents, plus another three? Do they get to that level of margin when they're competing around the world on this stuff, or are they even considering this? Just out of curiosity, because when I toured that mine and kind of heard the list of who the competitors are, no one in North America.
The range is in a very unique situation in that the range's economy rises and falls on the world steel market, not on the price of ore, but on the world steel market, because all those range pellets go to the lower Great Lakes, Erie, Indiana, Cleveland, the blast furnaces in the lower Great Lakes. And what is unique about that is, I might get these numbers a little wrong, but I believe the cost to ship a ton of taconite pellets from Duluth to the lower Great Lakes to Cleveland is probably about $8 or $9 a ton. And the cost to get a ton of those pellets from Brazil to those lower Great Lakes is something in the neighborhood of $50 to $60 a ton. It only costs about $45 to produce a ton of our pellets. So it's that transportation obstacle and the location of the blast furnaces that make it very difficult for the steel companies. Even if they wanted to get ore from somewhere else in the world, the transportation is such a huge obstacle. If they ever get it to the blast furnaces in the lower Great Lakes, they could never overcome it. So I think the long answer is 3-4 cents, 10 cents, 50 cents, $3 probably doesn't make much difference because it's way more than made up in the huge transportation advantage they have by vessel from Duluth to the blast furnace versus having to come into the Gulf of Mexico and up the Mississippi River. It's quite a journey. So there's a real competitive advantage for the range, and I do think a few dollars probably doesn't make any difference. It's the world price of ore at the blast furnace that really matters. Because they've got pretty competitive ore coming from Minnesota. And their other ore comes from Michigan. There is two mines in Michigan.
Moving on, Section 8 is just another part of the Iron Range Memorial Forest, and this is that Section 1 of the bill of the article and 5 and 8 all go together. They all have to do with the IRRRB expending money on the Douglas J. Johnson Fund to purchase forest land and held in trust on this Iron Range Miners Memorial Forest. And that's the same as the Senate provision.
And the Senate article has a series of provisions that are not similar to anything in the House bill. Sections 1 and 2 of the Senate article relate to Section 6. So let me start with Section 6, which modifies the property tax exemption for taconite production facilities. The taconite production tax is imposed as a tax that's in lieu of the property tax on taconite production properties. Section 6 would modify the scope of the property tax exemption so that it would not apply to either power plants or ore docks that are located at the taconite production facility. And then sections 1 and 2 provide that the ore docks and the power plants that become taxable under 6 would be included, would become subject to the commercial industrial property base that is used in the range fiscal disparities formula. Section 4 modifies the producer grant program so that under current law, producers are eligible for distributions that are equal to 30.1 cents per ton that's produced by each of those producers. This provision would limit the distributions at the rate of 30.1 cents per ton to the first 3 million tons that are produced, and then for production by any one producer between 3 and 8 million tons, there would be a lump sum distribution of $903,000, which is equal to the 30.1 cents per ton on the first 3 million tons. Then if the production for a particular producer goes above 8 million tons, they would qualify for an additional distribution based on a rate of 60.2 cents per ton for every ton in excess of 8 million tons. Section 5 would provide that the exemption that's in current law for the initial production of direct reduced ore would apply only to plants for which all the environmental permits have been obtained and construction of the plant has begun before January 1, 2009. And then Section 6 is the modification of that property tax exemption. Section 8 modifies the distribution of the production tax proceeds that go to counties by increasing by 5 cents per ton the amount that's paid into the county road and bridge fund and correspondingly reducing by 5 cents per ton the general distribution to the county. Section 9 modifies the treatment of the revenue that's derived from the property tax escalator so that it reflects the distribution of the 3 cents to the school districts that is taken out of the escalator. Section 12 provides that money that's set aside under current law for the Central Iron Range Sanitary Sewer District for a 2007 distribution would bear interest to the sewer district rather than to St. Louis County, which is the fiscal agent for those recipients. Then it also provides for a new distribution of 10 cents per ton to the IRRRB to be used for a new Highway 1 corridor account that would be distributed to the cities of Babbitt, Cook, Ely, or Tower, or any of them, for economic development projects that would be approved by the IRRRB. And these distributions would also accrue interest. Sections 13 through 15 modified the current aggregate tax law and provide essentially a separate aggregate taxation that would apply to taconite tailings, crushed rock, and agricultural or dimension stone and dimension granite that are removed from taconite mines. So those would become subject to the aggregate materials tax, and the proceeds of the tax on those materials would go to the IRRRB for use of the Environmental Protection Fund. Section 16 is a provision we discussed earlier that would authorize the town of Scambler to impose the aggregate materials tax as long as Otter Tail County does not impose the tax. And there's just a slight difference between the two provisions in that the Senate made it explicit that the town of Scambler would have to use the proceeds of the tax only for the purposes that are generally allowed for aggregate material taxes. Section 18 and 19 I mentioned earlier, those are the provisions that would eliminate the offset of certain taconite and related distributions to taconite school districts so that they would no longer have those amounts offset against the school aids that those school districts would otherwise receive.
Senator Bob.
Representative Simpson.
Could you give us a breakdown of what kind of revenue that raises under Section 12 and Section 13, 14, 15? Kind of a gross revenue are you talking about?
Section 12 is all money that was appropriated in law last year, and we're just clarifying there that the interest is going to accrue in the accounts that that money was put into, rather than just go to a general fund at the IRRRB, so that it would accrue for the project.
Distribution.
Section 13, 14, 15, let me say today not a lot,
This imposes just the regular aggregate tax that we have in law that counties now can impose. There's a lot of research going on to use taconite tailings, which is the waste crushed rock, for roadbed material. Considering the aggregate shortage here around the metropolitan area, there's a lot of people speculating that someday it might make sense to move some of those mountains of taconite tailings down here by rail. And what this would do is say if they're going to start to move it and sell it like that, now there's a very small amount sold for small projects, it would just subject it to the current aggregate tax that counties can now impose, which I believe is 7 cents a ton or 10 cents a yard, I think. It's the same numbers. Today it brings in very little, would potentially would bring in very little money, but someday, if those taconite tailings get used widely, and there are a couple demonstration road projects where there's a federal demonstration project that the Natural Research, NRI is doing, Natural Resource Research Institute, is doing, I believe, in Indiana. They're sending, I believe, a couple train loads of tailings down for a project down there. The federal government is exploring whether how well they'll work. Some people think there's a compaction issue with it because basically all the granules and taconite tailings, and it looks like sand, except it's gray, is basically all the same size. And to get really good compaction, you need all the different aggregate material to have different sizes, and that's how you really get good compaction. So there's some feeling that it might not compact as well as traditional gravel does out of a pit. So I don't think we really know the answer how widely it's going to be used, but there's a lot of it, really a lot of it, and it could provide a real aggregate solution for Minnesota because it's relatively easy to rail the road projects in Minnesota because the rails all connect to all the mines. So. This is something that range legislators have been talking about for years, is that if we're going to do this, maybe we should do it before the use of this becomes widely applicable and use it for in the taconite environmental fund to do mine land reclamation and those kind of things. Thank you. Long answer, but someday it potentially could have some real application. Lancheski had enough for today.
You're the chair.
Any
this
questions?
Is fun.
But it's not fun for some of these people sitting here. But there's a few people out there wish we'd start adopting something. They're probably waiting for one little thing.
Target.
There's people out there waiting for one little thing. I see the railroads are here and watching what we're doing. This doesn't apply to them.
Coal drains go from what into the ring? Here, is it old gravel going back?
Coal comes in Lake Superior. Well, we've got another article done. Mr. Manson, another article done with.
Done.
See, leadership was checking on us.
Who was there?
You didn't see him. Leadership came in to make sure we were still working.
Who came in?
The speaker and the majority leader were behind you.
They don't trust us?
A little bit ago. I think they might have thought we went home. Fooled them.
You gotta get those mannequins set up pretty soon.
Economic development. Should we wait till tomorrow?
Yes. That one seems like an extra plot. Farmsy.
You guys have Farmsy?
Yeah.
Was that
the egg? The bill, the egg.
Was that a governor proposal?
Some junkie.
Mr. Chair, one of your honorary IRRB members, Mr. Junkie.
Sierra Farm, you're...
I'm the farm consultant. He's Rook's driver. Remember
that. He's just nothing but a driver.
He's nothing but a driver.
Well, I think if I was going to make a guess, the majority leader and the speaker are probably going to come by tomorrow morning, too, and see if we're here.
Well, I think they're going to be sleeping in.
Maybe if we came in early enough, we could leave before they came by.
Is it 12:05, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair? Maybe
we recess for 20 minutes, came back, would we be meeting tomorrow?
Yes, we would, Mr. Chair. You know what? Maybe when they come by again, we should ask them if they came in to give us our target. Maybe they won't come back anymore. We could do that. Meet at 12:01.
Speech. We think they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's great risk in taking a 15-minute recess. Maybe 15 minutes is better than a 10-minute one. We are on the middle of page 52, Article 7. We wait till tomorrow, Representative Lanchesky.
Whatever you want,
your
Mr.
call.
Chair.
You're going to have
your day. Your day. Whatever
members,
you say.
Come back tomorrow. Representative Moore, what do you think?
I think orange is a good way
good
to.
Good for breakfast?
Good for breakfast.
Sir Marty, tomorrow?
Good choice.
We'll stay tonight.
I wouldn't mind starting tomorrow at 12:01 and getting out of here fairly early in the morning.
I wonder if we could pull that off.
Could they do?
I'm looking for us again later tomorrow.
You'd be gone.
You can drive home tonight if we do that?
I should leave my cell phone here on the table. The room would be locked up. I don't have a key. Maybe you should leave your cell phone here on the table, too.
Yeah.
Representative Simpson, should we go home?
Well, Mr. Chair, we've made just tremendous headway. We're still waiting, as Representative Lanchesky says, for these targets. We've heard a whole lot of veto talk this week. Maybe we pull the plug now. Tomorrow we come in the morning and wrap through the rest of this so on Monday we can get directly into the spreadsheet. Start doing her. Because I think, if we're not mistaken, 2 weeks from Monday, the session is to be over. And if we go through a veto process between now and then, things are going to get a little tight. So I'd like to see us get out of here and done.
I wonder, with this whole veto prospect, how hard is it going to be for us to get a target?
I don't know, you have probably a closer connection, sir, with your leaders than I.
Believe me, I know a little more than you. Senator Cohen might know. I think Senator Cohen knows. Senator Cohen know what's going on. It's his bills that are being vetoed.
You think?
He's the finance chair, right?
Mr. Chair, are you assuming that just because we're both co-located in St. Paul, I actually know what's going on with Senator Cohen? Does anybody know, Mr. Chair?
Anybody know?
But I said Senator Cohen on the floor, and I think he does know, but I don't think he's going to tell us. That's just how this place works.
Mr. Chair, if you met from 12:01 to 12:30, you decide you'd come back later Saturday if you get your targets.
I'm thinking.
Representative Lanchesky, I'm going to turn the gavel over to you. I'd rather be getting my boat ready tomorrow, much as I'd like to be here with you. Does anybody golf on the committee? Sarah Larson, you golf? Golf courses are all open, I think, all over the place.
Some people don't call my golf.
Sarah Marty, do you golf?
No, I don't.
Mr. Manson, golf?
Mm-hmm.
So Commissioner Golf? Representative Simpson, golfer?
Facsimile of the game.
Representative Carlson?
I'd be ditto.
You go golf a little bit?
A little bit.
You want going golfing tomorrow afternoon?
Hard to find the time. That's
Mr. Michael, do you golf? A little bit?
Let's get a little rain tomorrow.
Representative Lancheski? We could do some business out there, you and me.
I bet you smoke a cigar on the golf course, don't you?
One of the few places I do. I'd like to be smoking one in this
room.
Legal
in Bloomington.
Really?
You can't smoke a cigar on a golf.
Is that within our authority?
Yeah.
Is a golf course a public place?
What's in the new bill? Can you smoke on public golf courses?
Depends on what the conference committee report comes.
You just have to have a roof and two sides.
Mr. Chairman, I think when it's up in the House, we talked about every possible scenario in that long trial session, but I don't think golf courses came up.
So, Mark, you're a golfer?
No.
A little bit?
I've tried.
Other golfer?
Not well.
He's trying to get something going.
Never have.
Never.
Never.
Sarah Ma.
Awesome caddy.
Short clubs.
That's right. I'm a great caddy, Mr. Chair.
The Clearwater lunch is winning.
Ms. Baker? Ms. Off, golfers?
I do.
Yeah.
Oh, now we know.
I'd love to be out there.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Meet in Clearwater and check out the place that you guys are all raving about. To eat. To the tax committee. Then.
I think we are trying to make the 12 o'clock.
I think we should do the 12 to 12:10.
Just
12:05.
So they don't open up in the trailer.
It's long, right?
Another section here to go through.
You didn't ask Senator Scott.
No.
I'm a farmer.
It's work. Might like golf.
You know, I did try it a couple times. Couldn't really get the hang of it. Getting that little ball and that little hole so far away, you know. Not going where I wanted it to.
I don't know.
Takes a lot of practice. I'm really lousy. You know, the interesting thing about golf is that you're embarrassed. You're kind of embarrassed to go out there, you know, and once you start playing a little bit, you realize there are a lot of lousy golfers. Really a lot of them. So it isn't that hard to fit in.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Representative Simpson?
Yeah.
Accurate?
You can go out there and be frustrated just like anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, just what level of frustration you want.
Mr. Chair?
I
have to tell you that in my experience as a caddy, I don't know what upsets the golfer more, losing his ball in the bushes or losing his cigar among the twigs in the fall. Because you can't find them. You can't find the cigar in the twigs in the fall. And I realize that it doesn't matter if you lose the ball, if you lose the cigar, it's all his fault, but you still don't get a good tip. Yeah.
She really is a caddy.
See, with your golfing, Mr. Chair, you ever tried sand greens?
Tried sandwich?
Sand greens.
No. You?
No.
How were they?
Well, it's different. We used to have a state-operated golf course down in Whitewater State Park, and they used to teach down there, and they were sand greens. It was quite a popular little golf course during the season, you know, when you had a lot of tourists into the park, but they've closed it. But it had sand greens, and so after you'd play, you'd take a rake and you'd smooth it all out for the next round of golfers. And I never knew such a thing existed until I was down there. We used to go down there a lot.
Mr. Chair,
is
that golf? Is that kind of a random enforcement deal? You know, you make one good hit out of 50 and keeps you going? Or?
They were losing them.
I'm just trying to meet tomorrow. Just in case we don't call a meeting, I can say we met on Saturday.
Senator Bach, could they do, you know, these sand greens? It's a new idea to me. Could they do taconite tailing greens?
There it is. There it is.
Maybe there's our market.
There it is.
Yeah, there's no dirt in it, so the weeds wouldn't grow up in it.
Okay.
They're taconite bunkers. That's a good application.
A couple things by you for you in the next 5 minutes.
We'll spend those tailings and slip them tailings somewhere.
They're not good for you, though, are they?
Not the tailings?
They're asbestos-like fibers. They're not asbestos fibers.
It's an important difference, I would imagine.
Should we wait till tomorrow to adjourn, or?
This tomorrow on the east.
I do think leadership expects us to meet tomorrow.
Yes, they do.
They expect us to meet 6 minutes from now.
Maybe they're bringing the donuts. Oh, wait, we can't eat in here.
Good.
Look at that.
It's balancing.
Senator Bach.
Representative Simpson.
It could be this code of conduct, you know, if we did eat donuts in here on Saturday, maybe there would be a possibility that we could be thrown out.
Let's try that.
Did I bring him or are you going to?
Set him up in the back over there.
That's Senator Larson?
I got news for Representative Simpson. All my years in the Capitol, I've not met one person who could throw him out of this room. They have their hands full.
What do you think, Mr. Manson? Golf tomorrow or come back here?
Mr. Chairman, I kind of thought we were going to wrap the bill up tonight.
I thought we were making time.
Target. You know, if the House had cooperated, I tried to move one little provision. I wouldn't even adopt one little provision that didn't cost any money. What was that? I'm trying to think what it was.
Thief River Falls. We listened.
Retroactive to 2002.
Retroactive to 2002.
There's no point in doing it now.
With the donated building, they wanted the sales tax. Send back to them.
We want to make sure Senator Stump is watching when we adopt that.
You know, his grandkids live in my district.
Oh,
really? They're
during our Easter Passover break, one afternoon I decided I'd go to one of the local coffee shops for a cup of coffee and some time to relax. And I walk in, and
there he is.
There's Senator Stump. I was amazed. He met his wife, met the grandkids. Very pleasant.
We were all very pleased to hear Senator Stump's surgery went well. Hope he doesn't come back till next fall. Who knows the story of what happened in Senator Stump's vineyard while he was gone?
Well, I don't know what exactly.
He has a vineyard?
A whole bunch of folks out there.
Two fruiting
and wiring and taking care of stuff.
Who knows the story? What happened? Senator Stump.
You really are stretching it. You want a story about a business?
Well, Senator Stump was very stressed out because he was been tied up down here in his vineyard where he grows grapes to make wine. Apparently, you have to prune the vines this time of the year. Who knows the story of what happened up in Thief River? Anyway? Well.
Nobody.
Is this vineyard?
Was this a dream?
My understanding is that some fellow
neighbors
came in and pruned all of his vines.
That's nice.
Depends how good
Yeah, I heard that. He's been very stressed out about it. I heard that like 20 people from the community went out one day from his church and people that he knows in the community and spent a day pruning up all of his vines so that he didn't have to worry about it anymore.
Nice.
Makes you think about the neat thing about small towns.
You can grow the grapes that far north.
Cold weather grapes.
Are these folks from Tiefer?
Have to refrigerate them.
nice people in Thief River.
Yeah.
Maybe we should give them a sales tax exemption.
She's coming around.
I think if we hang around, we can get it out of
the back. My page is head on if we want to talk.
They won't give us a Target. We'll show them. We'll just start adopting stuff.
No, I think Representative Lencheski and Representative Simpson and I and Senator Marty, we saw some of that happen last year, didn't we?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Before they had a target?
Had people's attention.
Mm-hmm. Had people's attention.
I need to do that.
Do you have anything like that? And maybe we could make a deal.
By midnight? Wow.
You got anything? A little $350,000 piece in there you'd like to do?
We get a lot of little pieces in here we like to do.
Could each get a little something, we'd feel a lot better going home, sleep better.
I sleep better
when we help Senator Stump.
I'd sleep better if we killed a few things in here. Where should we start?
Senator Ma, wouldn't it be nice if we could leave and know that we helped Senator Stump and made him a hero back in his hometown tonight?
Absolutely.
Ron's hero or the...
The house is going to dream about that vineyard tonight, and we'll think about that. They will get strangled.
That wasn't good. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Marty.
I think it's time where you have to adjourn and she has to reconvene. Your day is over.
11 seconds.
Well, there's a rule about
I recently read the rules. What's
I think
the
it's
rule?
A two-third majority gets you another hour. Is that right, Representative Carlson? I think Representative Carlson probably knows.
That's right.
Two-thirds of each side gets you another hour.
There's no rule on what time you can start on day, is there?
I could be wrong on this. Representative Carlson
like
probably.
Seven
a.m. is a legislative day.
I believe in the joint rules of the House and the Senate, it says conference committees adjourn at midnight
unless
by a two-thirds vote.
I think it's something like that. Who's got the rules?
They can Nobody. Extend the time for one more hour.
I read it too.
So we can't move from so an hour on Saturday?
So if I was to move, extend the time for an hour, and that motion were to fail, I would be able to tell Senator Pogemiller I did everything I could to stay here another hour, and the committee just wouldn't extend the time.
This is accommodating.
In all seriousness, the rules do say midnight.
We don't want to get thrown out, Senator, for eating donuts or breaking the rules.
We wouldn't want to break rules.
That's right.
You better wait till Monday.
I think you can reconvene till 7. Can you?
And that clock had better be there tomorrow. We'll need that clock some other night next week.
A few years ago, we had a speaker that Anderson from the Health and Human Services sent them all home at midnight. I guess they were running a little bit over. And then he came down to this room right here, and he watched the NSP Prairie Island Conference Committee, which I happened to be on, run at 5:30 in the morning and never said a word.
So can you reconvene?
We're making progress.
Can you convene before 7 a.m.? I don't think you can.
I know. We were still running. But the interesting thing, I picked up the paper the following morning, and here was the headline about how the speaker had sent the Health and Human Service folks
so I was looking for someone.
Allowed another one to continue.
Mr. Chairman.
How is it that the Health and Human Services Committee can continue to meet when the joint rules clearly say 1 o'clock?
They've been meeting around the clock.
They've been breaking the rules?
So,
Mr. Chairman.
One amendment.
Senator Marty?
36
we should make sure we don't break any of the rules, and maybe we better not meet till Monday when we can find out what the rules are for sure.
But you know, you should entertain that motion now because you are running over. You are in violation of the rules. So we need need that two-thirds vote to keep.
Who wants to move? Let's see if we get a two-thirds vote to stay. Chair can't make a motion.
Sure you can.
Stay and mean we have to meet separately tomorrow?
So, Jessica, what time would we meet tomorrow?
I think 9.
9 o'clock. It'd be time after we adjourn to get a round of golf in. Mr. Manson, he looks like a golfer.
What's the weather supposed to be like tomorrow? Rain.
Simulator.
Representative Simpson, how long does it take to get home?
3 hours and 15 minutes.
Who can top
give
that?
Give or take a minute.
3 hours and 25. Senator Squid, how long do you get home tomorrow?
Depends on how hard I'm going to drive. About 4 hours and 15 minutes. If I don't stop or anything.
So, Mark Ward, how long does it take to get home?
With a quick stop, 350.
I'm doing 280 miles. 4 hours.
Yikes.
235 for me. Representative Mark Ward, how many miles home?
About 242.
Mr. Chair, you didn't ask me.
I'm trying to build a case for adjourning early tomorrow. I don't think you'd be contributing. Representative Lencheski, you think we could not spend all day here tomorrow so Mr. Manson could go get a little golf in tomorrow afternoon?
I think that's a good idea. If we agree when leadership comes back in, we ask them if they've come to bring our target.
Oh, they're going to be going. Absolutely.
9 o'clock?
Sounds good.
9 o'clock work for everybody.
Senate time.
Sounds good.
Hmm? The House has the gavel, so.
Orange.
Is House time 9 o'clock, or is it 10 after 9? Or
9.
9?
We all want to go home. Tomorrow.
You senators have a reputation about time. That's why I said House time or Senate time.
I've heard that.
I heard, Senator Bach, I heard you're very punctual, actually.
Try to be.
I hear you run your committee.
Try not to vote on stuff until we have other members there. But.
That helps.
There, what?
Right.
Senator Lencheski, do you like orange?
I like orange, but I don't really feel like orange tomorrow.
Well, what would you like?
I didn't have anything.
We didn't that.
You have another option?
I didn't have anything either.
Don't say pink.
Senator Bach is catching on now.
It took me days.
Hey, who's catching on here?
Green.
It's an indication of how much Senator Bach understands what's going on in the conference.
Green.
Green. Green.
Senator Kelly had a green tonight.
Find you sometimes.
Senator Bach.
Your green golf
Representative Simpson.
Not knowing all these rules that you have over here in the Senate and finding out about the no donut rule and the no candy rule and the no past midnight rule. And what about the Saturday have to wear a tie rule? Or I don't want to break any rules.
The rule is green.
Marty, you've been here much.
Dress code in committee.
Senator Marty, you've been here much longer than I.
No dress code in committee.
No dress code in committee.
Except for green. You were listening.
That's right. Manson, you ever see tax companies dressed casually on weekends, or do they usually?
I got my green on.
Yeah, that's it.
A lot of times they wear golf shirts.
Golf shoes. Never.
Golf shoes. Ready to go.
Commissioners have to dress.
Commissioner, going to be here tomorrow?
Possibly.
Oh, this is when we act.
God.
Representative Diedrich going to be able to join us tomorrow?
No.
Is she excused or is she absent?
A non-voting member is a freer agent. They don't have as much of the responsibility. So you can come and go.
I just wonder if all these people standing around here, what's their billable hours for?
You know, Senator Bach, I think as long as the Senate doesn't have a sixth conferee, I think the pressure's off.
We've been working on it.
Well, I heard your first idea. I didn't think that was the greatest, but not that I don't love them.
I figure, Representative Carlson, if some of these people that are sitting around here do get billable hours, there's likely to be some new people on their Christmas card list.
If you all leave,
what can you do about that? In your book?
What do we have in there? We got furs. We got furs for clothing. I've about had enough. Anybody? Anything else? Announcements for the speaker? You always seem to remember that. I've been gone 5 years and I still hear announcements. We don't do that in the Senate. What do we say?
Announcements. Of Senate interest.
Of Senate interest.
Senate interest.
Yeah. As opposed to it.
You are
you talk
so
about the Journal of the Senate as opposed to the urinal of the House.
Read all the names every day.
No way. Yeah. I saw you doing that.
Is that for an eagle all kick or what? You gotta be kidding me. Why doesn't anyone stop that?
Part of the culture.
Why doesn't anybody change it? You like it that way.
I don't know. It's slow to change. Nine o'clock tomorrow.
Sounds good.
9 o'clock.